The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve? Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Friday, 16th day of November, 2012. Dow's up 41 points, S&P's up 5, the comp is up 7, gold is up, nope, it's back down a dime now, so it's flittering with the flat line. Apple down $3.43, crude up $1.28, there's a fire on an oil rig, I believe in the Gulf of Mexico, and that is pushing, I think there's two deaths there, and that is pushing the price of oil higher. This morning, the market was selling off pretty handily, and some congressional comments while we were on break. We take a 30-minute break each day between the live trading room and the daily radio broadcast, and often during that little 30-minute period of time, big things happen, and some congressional leaders made some kind of comment that buoyed the market, and if you can see my screen, this is the S&P 500 E-mini futures. This is an hourly chart. This morning, on the way down, we had 1342 as the low of the day. Now, we watched that through the second hour of trading, and we said if the market comes down and tests 42, a break of that could lead to lower prices, and we do have one more weekly trading zone below us. Quite a ways down. It could happen. If the congressional comments had been negative as opposed to, or perceived as being negative as opposed to being perceived as positive, we could have seen this run the other way, but what we were watching for was a break of this 42. I said, guys, now, here's the thing. This morning, when price hit 42, there were plenty of people waiting to buy, and they ran it all the way back up to the zone at 49.50. So once we get back to 42, we have to assume that there will be some people who will still perceive 42 as a potentially good price, a fair price, and they'll attempt to run it up again. And then we talked about, well, what happens if it breaks? How do we know if this thing's going to go, and how can we potentially get into a short trade if that's what's going to happen? We talked about a method of using first the break of that low at 42 and then waiting for the market to pull back above 42. See, first we want to break 42, then we want to pull back above 42, and then the second time we break below 42, we want to be really pretty interested in that one. You know, this is a conservative way of selling on a stop, taking advantage of a breakdown, and you can flip it over and use it to take advantage of a breakout. What we did, though, is we said what we want to do, because now we're dealing with a secondary low. First we had 42, and then we had a low of 40 and a quarter. So let's get a couple ticks down below that new low, just to be sure. And so we called it at 39.75. What a great spot to have your sell on a stop order, because you didn't get triggered, you didn't get stopped out, and now you're just sitting back going, wow, I'm really glad I wasn't in that particular trade. Last night we had a tweet that said, consider being long above 53, and the market did run up to 57, okay? Now it came up and tapped 53 a couple times, dropped lower. And when it finally broke 53, it did run right up to 57 in the second hour. We had thought it might get a little higher, but 57 is all it had to give us. And then we reversed. Now look where we are right now. We're right back at that. See this line across here? Got a little double top right there. Is it a double top or a triple top or a quadruple top? Here, let's do this. There's too many tops to count. We'll just call that a ceiling. How about that? Now, this is what got interesting yesterday afternoon and last night. For 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 28 hours. We've been consolidating at this weekly zone of 49.50. And you might say, well, wait a minute. That actually traded up above it. It did, but it came right back to it. And this reached way below it, but what did it do? It popped right back to it. And this traded well above it, but so far, what's it doing? Well, right now it's running into some resistance, and it looks like it wants to pull back into the zone. So this area here has some incredible magnetic pull to it. And now for 2 days, price has really failed to break away. If we can break this ceiling here, the next zone overhead is 62.63. If it turns out that these positive comments from Congress were not maybe as positive as originally thought, we could see the market reverse. The thing is for going on 2 days now, price has not been able to lose its connective tissue. Look at these hourly candles, every one of them touching, with a couple of rare exceptions across here, touching this weekly zone at 49.50. So this is just a sticky area, and we're going to be stuck here until we're not. We break away. So that's what's happening. That's what's happened so far this morning. That's why the market decided to run up. Now, we've all been very concerned about the fiscal cliff and the economy. But, you know, there's some folks that aren't the least bit concerned about that. I know. Christie's and Sotheby's racked up close to $1 billion this week in just two New York sales of contemporary art, making one small corner of the world appear as if the global financial crisis had never happened. Late yesterday, or late Wednesday, Christie blew away the records for auction splurges with what it said was the highest grossing contemporary auction ever, raising $412 million. The evening sale set a new record total for any post-war and contemporary art sale over the past 6 years. Christie has led this market first over the $200 million, then the $300 million, and now over the $400 million barrier. Leading the way was a canvas of violent black brushstrokes by abstract expressionist Franz Klein that sold for $40.4 million. That's four times as much as his previous auction record price. Now, this is in the same America where we have 45 million people, I think, if I got the number right, people on food stamps. This picture that probably won't even hang on this guy's wall because of its value. It'll have to hang in a safe somewhere. $40 million. I'm not jealous that this guy has $40 million to spend on a picture. It's not that at all. I'm just mystified. Christie's had estimated the painting would go for between $20 and $30 million, you know, because we are in an economic decline. But there it went. Thrusting Klein into the front ranks of the abstract expressionist market. Andy Warhol's Statue of Liberty sold for $43.76 million. Another Warhol, Marlon, which depicts the actor Marlon Brando in a familiar brooding pose, sold for $23.7 million. Jeff Koons' sculpture Tulips fetched $33.7 million, and a Roy Lichtenstein nude with red shirt sold for $28 million. And then Sotheby's right up the street, they had a big auction, and Jackson Pollock's Number 4, this was painted back in 1951. Well, when I say painted, I mean, well, we know Jason Pollock, right? It was estimated that it would actually auction at $25 to $35 million. It sold for $40.4 million, breaking the previous $23 million record for works by the abstract expressionist. Now, Jackson Pollock, I don't know if you know, he was a bit of a troubled soul. I showed you a website the other day. Let me see how quickly my browser window will load, and I'll see if I can show it to you really quickly here. Okay. Now, in case you missed the man's name, it's Jackson Pollock. In your browser window, type in Pollock. .org. Pollock.org. And through the magical mysteries of the internet, this is how people's stuff gets hacked. Okay, I better not hack that on live radio. Okay, we'll have to, I just took you guys to that site the other day. All right, but you could go in there and do your own expressionist painting in the Pollock style. Do you guys remember that? Okay. Well, I mean, he threw paint at a canvas. You know what? You can go. I'll figure out what's wrong with the site. And if we get it, if I can figure out what is wrong or if there's another entry. I'll show you later in the show. But, hey, if somebody wants to pay $40 million for it, God bless them. You know, hang that beauty on the wall. I got some more news here really quick. And my news app's not playing nicely. Article. I'm reading my screen. Apple has now lost over 25% of its market cap. It's down. It was down another $10 today, but from 7.05, the all-time high, I think it was, it's dropped now. it's lost over a couple hundred dollars per share. I got to get out of this app. It's not working. All right, we'll skip Apple for now. We'll move on. We'll talk about my friend, Jeff Bezos. Actually, I don't know Jeff, but I told you that with that Steve fellow, Steve Jobs, out of the picture now, sadly, that Jeff Bezos might, you know, of course, other than the president, Jeff Bezos might be the smartest man on planet Earth. This morning, Fortune magazine named Amazon's Jeff Bezos as its business person of the year, calling him the ultimate disruptor. In a wide-ranging interview, Bezos revealed that he has some pretty odd meetings for a business that definitely hasn't been kind to the paper business for the past several years. For a company intensely involved in e-commerce, tech hardware, and even database software, the meetings of its top executives seem like something out of the 1950s. Meetings of his S-team, the senior executives, begin with the participants quietly absorbing the written word. No, not that word. Specifically, before any discussion begins, members of the team, including Bezos, consume 6-page printed memos in total silence for as long as 30 minutes. New hires are shocked. They're just not accustomed to sitting silently in a room and doing a study hall with a bunch of other executives. Bezos says the act of communal reading guarantees the group's undivided attention. Writing a memo is an even more important skill to master. Full sentences are harder to write, he says. They have verbs. The paragraphs have topic sentences. There's no way to write a 6-page, narratively structured memo and not have clear thinking. An admirable commitment to literacy, especially for a company in the book business, and what also seems like good, if a time-consuming, management practice. Now, he also doesn't believe in paying people a whole lot of money. The second in command at Amazon makes $175,000 a year. Unlike Google and some of the other tech startups out there, they don't give away free food. They don't have a big cafeteria with 5-star chefs. They don't have urban rebounding, you know, by your workstation. This is like an actual job that you go to every day. He pays his people fairly. He doesn't believe in overpaying them. He works every day. He's not just some jet setter, you know, on a private plane going here and there. This guy's in there down on his knees every day working, doing the deal, putting stuff on shelves. He works for a living. He runs Amazon. He's just been named the business person of the year by Fortune. He gets up every day and goes to work. Now, I will say this, the second in command who, you know, makes a piddling $175,000 a year salary, he does have some pretty nice restricted stock units worth about $20 million. So he's not going broke working for Amazon. But this Jeff Bezos, he believes in compensating people for kind of what they're worth. You know, not okay, just because you come to work, just because you land the job, that's not quite enough. You know, performance-based pay is what it's called. And I've long said that I think, you know, everybody, from priests to school teachers to police officers, everybody should be paid based on performance. It's like a commission. Do you know how much more productive our society would be if everyone was trying to be as efficient and do their job the best they could instead of trying to figure out how little they could do and still get paid? We would live in a much different world. There is trouble in Jerusalem, but then when isn't there? Air raid signals erupted in Israel's holy city this morning. The air raid follows a failed attempt at a ceasefire when the Egyptian prime minister visited Gaza. Now, Israel had said they would not fire on Gaza while the prime minister was in the area, but it's reported that they received missile fire from the beleaguered strip almost immediately. Israel responded with more targeted strikes, officially breaking the ceasefire for both sides. The situation is developing, and there's more news to come. But the city is on high alert. You know, most of our life, we've heard about all this trouble over there and this fighting, and after a while, you don't even hear it anymore. Okay? So when you wake up one morning and find out that, you know, something really horrible and horrific has taken place, you're going to go, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize there was anything going on. Well, there is, and there has been, and there will be. But it just kind of becomes like white noise after a while because we've heard it all our lives. But it is coming to a head. Now, I was wrong about Jeff Wilkie's pay over at Amazon. He only makes $156,000 a year. But again, he's got 20 million in restricted stock units. We all know that the official clock says there's 45 days to the fiscal cliff. Well, Art Cashin, who's a great guy and has a wonderful way of putting things in perspective, he says the clock is ticking. Congress must address the fiscal cliff. Without a deal, billions of dollars worth of tax cuts and spending programs are going to expire by year end. But we do have a month and a half, right? Well, Art says no. Media types keep suggesting we have until year end to resolve the fiscal cliff problem. But Art says while that is technically correct, it doesn't jibe with the congressional schedule. Our elected officials will be taking off for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and Hanukkah. But they don't adjourn for just a day. According to the current schedule, Congress is only scheduled to meet 12 more days this year. So that 45-day fiscal cliff thing, in reality, unless they call a special session, or cancel Christmas, or Hanukkah, or Thanksgiving, it's really 12 days. 12, because Congress has to be the ones to solve this, and they're only working 12 more days this year. So, pray for America. We need it. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
Let me just pass the baton right on over to you. I'd said I was going to skip the news, and I got to thinking, I go, boy, that Michael, he said he liked the news, and so, doggone it.
I did.
I'm going to give him some news.
So. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And now All right. You've taken the screens, I can hack Pollock's site and figure out what's going wrong.
All right. Here we go. I am making me... There we go. Everybody.
All right, I got your screens.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, let me minimize this.
I'll mute my mic so that you won't hear the sounds of the hacksaw.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, I'm going to start the recording now. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Friday, November 16th, 2012. Let's go over the results right away. The NQ, we are plus 11 ticks, and the gold, we are plus 1 tick. Okay. Let's see. If you have not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply. Sign up for the free trial. All we ask for is your name and your email address, and we'll send you an email that will show you how to, with a video link in it, that will show you how to download the charting platform that you see here, all the indicators that you see here, and if you need a link, if you need my layout so that your charts can look exactly like mine without you having to do all that, all kinds of work to make it look the same, just send me an email at support@cfrn.net requesting a layout, okay? And I'll be happy to send you my layout. Had a partners meeting last night. Went really well, I thought. We covered goals, and we covered a whole bunch of stuff that we had just applied today. And we apply it every day, but I really talked through it today, I think. more than I normally do. Just to bring everybody back to what we discussed in the meeting last night. That said, I'll go over the trades that I took. I didn't take anything on the ES, but I do want to highlight some things on the ES. Okay. The first thing that I want to highlight is right here. We had a pullback down to the BBC. There were two things that would have kept me out of this. One is that the weekly trading zone is right above it, and the other is that we had a lower high pivot right there. Okay, right there. We had a lower high pivot. All right. Now, you would think just the close above this trend line would work, and it did. Now, that's one way to look at it, if you wanted to. Okay. Here's another one right over here. This one right here, you could have just bought the BBC, though. Okay. Now, what does that look like on the four tick range? Well, let's put them up side by side and take a little look at them, okay? Let's just do this. This move up started, let's say, when we got above the weekly trading zone. We'll go to 1149, okay? Once it finally moved above the weekly trading zone. 1149, how could you have entered into this using the four tick range? Here we go. There's a trend line down. Here's a close above that trend line. It didn't hit the BBC. Strong trend going up. That was one way you could have done it. Pulled back, tested the BBC. Had some bullish divergence, though the cycle was headed down. So in this case, because the cycle's headed down, you want to wait for that close above the trend. There it is. Let's see. Did we have another one? Up here, we had another one where the cycle was still headed down. Now, right here, this is weakening right here. What you're anticipating, and this comes from the meeting last night, what you're anticipating right here, with the cycle headed down as much as it is right here, and even the green line is headed down, you're not thinking that the BBC is going to hold. All right, you're thinking that the BBC is going to break, and it's going to pull through the BBC to the next area of support, which happens to be the yellow brick road right here. Okay, now, because we didn't get a higher swing off of this or this, you're not anticipating this is going to hold. It did hold, but you weren't anticipating that it would. But let me just mark the spot here, right in there for the long. Okay. Now it pulls all the way down through the BBC, through everything. And you see the black line and the MA1 both move down below the BBC. Price pulls back up to the BBC after doing that. At this point right here, you're thinking maybe it's going to go down because it's just had this big run up. This is on the four tick range, mind you, so you're looking for your down close to confirm it. Here's your down close. There's your bearish divergence. Okay. This really doesn't go anywhere. It goes about, I don't know, a point, half a point, 54, half, down to 54, half a point. Okay. Then it reverses, and then you're in chop after that. You don't put in a higher swing. You don't put in a lower low. You know, no higher swing, no lower swing, just chop. So this period, right after this right here, is all chop. Before that, there were one, two, three opportunities to take winning trades on the move up after it crossed above the weekly trading zone. Okay, the weekly trading zone's right here. This was after it crossed above it. And that's on the four tick range. On the 10,000 contract, there was one opportunity right over here after it crossed above it. And you'd still be in that one. Did it make it to 56.5? Yeah, it did. Okay, so it made a 2-point profit target. Okay. It actually made it pretty quick, it looks like. Yeah. From right here, you would have been looking to enter right in here. You would have been looking to enter right in here. Okay, on the pullback down to the BBC, 53.75 would have put you in at 54. It went right up to 56. So if you're looking for a 2-point profit target, then you have it. How many points? 2, 4, 5.5. 5.5. Though on this one right here, I probably would have taken a break even. Okay, or maybe locked in 1 point, so it might have been 5 had I been taking that. Okay. For what it's worth, you know, Frank, I know the question that you're asking is, you know, because Andrew was trading this and he's making a good profit every day doing this. He's taking small pieces, small bits of it every day. You know, every trade he's taking, you know, 4 ticks, 6 ticks, 8 ticks. He's not looking to make a killing on each trade. Okay? And that's how he ended up with 16 ticks this morning, pretty early on. All right, I'm going to put that down and move this over and cover the NQ. Now, we had a lot of movement on the NQ. We only took a couple of trades. Where the heck are they? There they are. looks like we took four trades on the NQ. Okay. All right. Here we go. We get a bullish cross right here. Now, I covered all this stuff down here, this drawing that I did down here. I covered all this in the meeting last night. If you're a partner, you can go out into the members area on the website and watch the meeting from last night. If you didn't make it in there, or if you just want to review it, the meeting, the webinar from last night, the recording from it, is out there in the members area now. So you guys can go out there this weekend and take a look at it. Anybody that's on the free trial who wants to go out there to the members area, you need to become a partner to get out there. If you take care of it, you know, we'll get you your credentials to get out there right away as soon as you take care of the stuff you need to take care of to become a partner, okay? Now, I went over this last night in the meeting. This bouncing here and here and here, and what to anticipate from each one. Once it moved up here, we were anticipating it was going to move back down, find support right here, then move back up, then move back down, find support again, then move back up. And it did. It did all those things, and we took advantage of it with a long trade right in there. We could have gotten in a little earlier on that long trade right here, just on the up close with the bullish divergence. But we ended up doing it on the up close right up above the trend line. Okay, I don't remember how much profit we took on that trade. I think it was 5 ticks. We took a break even on the next trade right here. We missed this one and this one. In here, I was suggesting, I was telling everybody that this looks like it's a pretty messy area, pretty choppy. You probably want to stay out. We shorted over here. That was really fast, this move right here. We shorted and we went to break even really quick. Okay. okay. Last night and blah, blah, blah. Market replay. Okay. Bert. You should read the comment that's in the text right now if you can. All right. And let's see, we took a break even on this trade. I must have been looking at something else because I didn't see when this all happened over here. All right, this was the trend line here, then the black got up above the BBC, so we weren't looking for anything there on the short side until we got this right here. All right, we didn't get any closes up above it, and then it closed back down below this one, suggesting that it was going to keep moving down. We didn't have any opportunity in there until it got down here. That gave just a little bit down to the low right here, and then I think I was anticipating that it would keep moving down from right here, but it didn't. Okay, if you jumped in right here, you got stopped out on that. Let's see. I had drawn in these. I had taken this trade right here. Once we crossed down below and we pulled back up, it didn't quite make it up to the BBC. I had drawn in the divergences down here and the lower tops on the green line. It tried to pull back up, and here it gave a down close, and we took some profit on that one. All right, I think we took about 10 ticks or something like that on that, or something. Maybe not 10, because we ended with plus 11 and we had 5, so maybe 6. I think that was our last live trade that we took. Yeah, it was. But there were more opportunities in here. More of the same stuff. Okay? You bullish cross, you tested the BBC, you're up close with bullish divergence. Here's the trend line. If the bullish divergence, the bounce off the BBC, happens to close above the trend line, that's just, you know, that's gravy for you. Right here, this was an A-grade trade because the MA1 never turned red on the pullback, and the cycle never turned red on the pullback. So that right there, my friends, is an A-grade trade. You can jump into that right there with complete confidence that it's gonna move up. Let's see, I thought we had a couple of those in here this morning. Now, these things that I draw here, these little trend lines on the attempts to pull back down to the BBC that don't quite make it to the BBC, if you're looking at the slope and the color of the MA1 and of the cycle, and all these things, if you happen to have a divergence and all that stuff working for you, that just adds to the probability of the trade, okay? there's a ton of things that you can look at in here that will give you indications of whether that trade's going to run a good distance or not. Okay, I covered all this stuff in the partners meeting last night. So, Lynn, you can go out there and take a look at that if you want to. Okay. It was about 2.5 hours, I think, 2.25 hours was the meeting last night. And that is it right there, guys. Same thing happening over and over and over and over and over again. So there's lots of stuff. Yes, that partners meeting is the weekend. That's there's a bunch of information in there if you guys want to go. And you know, I know halfway through it last night when I had been talking for about a half an hour and I stopped and I said, all right, does everybody get that? And the responses were not positive, so I went over it again. And yes, Lynn, yes, it will. I'm sorry. I am so sorry. I didn't call you back. Here we go. All right, same thing. You pull up to the BBC, you get a bullish cross, and it pulls back down. You get an up close right there, and there it goes. Okay. There it is there. There it is. Oh, it's right there, actually. Do you guys see what I'm looking at? I'm drawing trend lines as price approaches the BBC. Drawing trend lines as price approaches the BBC. It's a bonus if you happen to have divergence going with it. You know, that's just a bonus, okay? Now, you can see right in here, this was during the break, but you had plenty of opportunity in there to get into that. Even right in here, you know, the thing's still moving, right? The thing's still going up. Yeah, it's still going up. But all the way up here, you know, you could have been taking trades all the way up here. Right there. You're looking for the up close above this trend line. Here it is right here. Okay, for that move up. Again, right here, you're looking for the up close above this. This is the trend line. The up close above that trend line. And there it is right there. The up close above this trend line. Here it is right here. Okay. That's what you're looking for. Now, when you happen to have divergence working with it and the slope of the tops and bottoms on the green line on the slingshot are all working with it, you know, that's all gravy. It just makes it confirms everything for you. Okay. Now that was the NQ. I'm gonna jump off the NQ here and we can look at soybeans really quick, I guess. The beans this morning. We had been looking at the beans, and you know, this is a multi-month low right here. This 1372 is a multi-month low. Earlier this week, we were saying if it got below 1405, we should see a pretty good move down. 1405 was right over here on the 15th. Well, that was yesterday on the 15th. I think we got below before that too, though. We did, and you can see from 1405 it moved all the way down here to 1372. We'll say 1372. And you know, that's what, 28.33. That's 33 cents, the equivalent of 33 points on the ES. All right. And that's significant. How can you have traded this? Well, let's see. I had drawn trend lines in here. Right here, you could have taken a short on the way down right here on this down close, but I didn't like it because the black line had moved up above the BBC. All right, now once that happened and it moved up again, right in there was a trend line, right over here. And this one had bullish divergence and everything right here on the bottom. Okay, I had that going for it too. Now when you get the divergence, what you expect is that the green line is going to work its way up into the cycle. So that's where you expect it to pull back again. All right. And this one attempted a little tiny pullback right there. Now down here, the cycle's going down. Do you expect the BBC to hold again? No, the cycle's going down. It reversed, gave you bearish divergence, but the black line got up above the BBC there. Okay, so we weren't expecting it to hold in there. Right now, what's happening is, let's see, right here is the trend line, and right there is a down close. So you would anticipate that this is going to go down at this point. It hasn't gone down yet. All right. That is the soybeans, the NQ, the YM. I'm going to skip the YM for right now because we didn't really cover it that much in the live trading room this morning. Gold. No, the gold is a four-tick range chart. It's the same exact type of setups over and over and over and over and over again that we did on the NQ. Okay. Right here, we were looking for a pullback up and test of the BBC. Because we lost our divergence down here, meaning the cycle was headed up by the time we got our down close, we waited for a close below the trend line. So I got short in here. I ended up taking one tick profit on this. You can see it did give more than that, but that's what I ended up taking on it. Okay. In here, there were more opportunities once it changed directions in here. Here, there's a trend line for you. Once it changed directions, there on the upside, right here you can see drawing a trend line on it, it went right through the BBC. So over here was an opportunity to short. Over here I actually did short. I took a break even on that. Over here was another opportunity to short. Over here was another one. Then it changed directions again. Do you guys see all this? When it changes directions, you get your cross of the MA1 above the BBC, the black line above it too. Okay? These are just over and over again, the same thing's happening. And these are little opportunities for you to take profit in the market. And they happen every single day. All right. That's that. I can go over every single trade in here if you want, but basically it's just more of the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over, and over again. You're doing the same thing again and again and again. Now here, I'll bring the Russell up. You're looking at the same thing on the Russell, okay? Same exact thing. You don't have to, because you change in markets, you don't have to change indicators, you don't have to change setups, you don't have to change any of that stuff, all right? Let's just look at some of this stuff here. Whoop, what just happened there? The current market right here, okay? There you have it. Over here, what time is it? 12:43. Okay. I'll wrap it up here shortly. So we can get David and everyone else going. Over here, everything dropped through, so you weren't looking at it on that side. Then it pulled back up, and it went through again, so you weren't looking at it there. But right there, you can look at it. Okay. Alright. The fella that's calling me right now, I cannot answer the phone. But I will call you back. Okay. Right in there, you're looking for the down close, which was right there. Okay. And let's see. Well, that's pretty much it, right? More of the same stuff over and over and over again. Right in here. And this was one of those ones where we happen to have, on the down close, we had a little bit of bearish divergence. So you were anticipating that it was going to move down off of that, too. Jeff, phone lines closing wireless, sent to email. Okay. I don't think that was to me. Alright. There it is again. Okay. This isn't the pre-market here, but the same stuff is applying. Okay. You're looking at the same exact thing. Over and over and over again. That's the Russell. Alright, I mean, we'll do it again on crude if you want. We can do it on crude oil. By the way, you should have rolled to January crude, okay? Rolled to Jan crude. But you can see in here again and again and again, it's the same thing. Alright, there's our trend line. Oh, that's our trend line. Right there. Okay, and on the other side of it, here's our trend line. Right there. Again and again and again. It's the same thing. All right, there's a ton of opportunity in here for everyone, no matter what market you want to trade. Now, if you don't have You know, things like gold, the day margins on gold are about $4,500. So if you don't have, you know, a big enough account to trade gold, well, you don't have to. You can trade the NQ, you can trade the YM, you can trade the Russell, you can trade the ES, you can trade all of those with $500 day margins, roughly $500 day margins. And you know, you can do all this day, all this stuff. All right. That said, guys, if you have not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cfrn.net/apply, sign up for the free trial. If you have taken a free trial with us and you want to see what we did in the partners meeting last night, you want to watch it over the weekend because it is 2.5 hours long. Take care of the paperwork and you'll be able to watch that over the weekend. And I went into a lot of detail about the slingshot and divergence on the slingshot and all that sort of stuff. All right. And I also went into a lot of detail about stuff on the price. But honestly, on the slingshot, I think last night we were looking at the British pound. Just out of the blue, I threw the British pound up there, and I had not looked at the British pound in about, you know, in months anyway. And we used that as an example, just a random market. Used that as an example, and it worked, you know, perfectly. It worked very, very well, the way that it does on pretty much all the markets, applying the same exact techniques and everything across all the markets. All right? Now, that's it. I'm going to wrap it up. If anybody has any questions, you can email us at support@cfrn.net. Okay? support@cfrn.net. And if you have any questions at all about, you know, about the charting platform or anything like that, you can call 1-866-928-3310. Again, that's 866-928-3310. Bert and or Leslie will be happy to help you out. All right, that's it. Going to wrap up the recording right here.
All right, guys, with that said, we're going to move right on out to Vegas, talk to our friend Mr. David Williams, pagetrader.com, and Ms. Robin Dane, the trading coach, who has an internet down today. She's having a down day on the internet. And also, standing in the wings waiting to chat is Ben from Traders Audio, so don't touch that radio dial.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310 and we'll send you out a no obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Dwayne.
Hey, David. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, and good morning, Michael.
Good morning, David.
And I do believe we've got Ben with us. Ben, are you there? Ben, are you there?
I'm here. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, guys.
Good morning, Ben.
Live from the floor of the exchange, tradersaudio.com. Tell us what's going on, Ben.
Oh, all kinds of craziness down here today. High energy to the downside initially off the open, which was basically just continuation of the high energy activity we've been seeing since the election. But then we had a couple of Republicans come on the screen there, and we're talking about how they were trying to get something good going, and basically we caught a bit of a bid, a strong bid. It was definitely news-related from 43 all the way up to initially up to 51 and then recently back up to that 59 level, right up to yesterday's highs. But for the most part, I don't really think that we've breached any major level of resistance. I mean, yes, we've seen a 19 handle range day, basically straight down off the opening range from 53 to 40 and then right back up to 59. But, you know, everybody's talking about, oh, we just put in the bottom and, you know, major reversal pattern and all these, you know, very presumptuous type statement, but what I want to remind everybody who's talking about the bottom is that a 10-handle bounce off the low or a 20-handle bounce off the low is nothing considering that we've seen 100 handles off the last 8 days of trade. So, you know, it was last Tuesday night. We were trading right up at 1430. And so we're, you know, we almost saw 100 handles of trade off that level. And I don't think that a 20-handle bounce would any means be considered a bottom at this point. I'm looking more up above levels, up around 1386, I think it is, was a high from, I can't remember what day it was, but I think that would be, a level to keep an eye on. Again, I know it's quite a ways off of where we are, but considering that, you know, we've been really, really bearish and just talking downside since the election again. So from, you know, 86.40, or I'm sorry, from 1430. So, but a lot of energy here recently, Dwayne. I mean, the last week, all week long, basically, ever since, you know, I can't remember the last day we talked, but wow, a lot of energy to the downside and, participation, follow through, conviction. The one thing everybody's talking about, and I'm sure you guys have taken notice and mentioned, is the fact that the volatility index has yet to see levels at 20, shockingly. And the fact that the dollar index as well is kind of just grinding higher up to 81.50 today. But, you know, for the most part, again, it's like just a grind. We everybody's expecting to see this release in the volatility, release in the dollar, and it just hasn't happened. Bonds finally found mid-152 handle today, but they've come right back off 152 now, you know, or 151.30. I'm not looking at the board here right now, but I know it's right around that level. So yeah, I mean, actually the 152.05. So yeah, bonds are in multi-week highs, dollar as well. But basically, Dwayne, it still seems really heavy. It still seems extremely weighted, but most important, I don't know which way the market's going. I always make that clear. If I did, I would not be on the phone with you guys right now. And I mean that the nicest way. Okay.
I hear you.
But what I'm seeing and most important that I can definitely nail down, put my finger on, is energy. I mean, there's an enormous amount of energy associated with this trade and that's exactly what we were looking for. Call it profit taking, whatever you want. I don't know. You know, uncertainty, concerns about fiscal cliff. I basically what I'm saying is I don't think it's all of a sudden going to stop. Okay. So again, I don't know if we're going to go higher or lower. My working assumption right now is to the downside because we've been establishing areas of value to the downside clearly on the daily time frame. But again, I make it clear. I'm just reading the chart just like everybody else. And the one thing I can speak of is the enormous amount of energy that we've been seeing in the pit here.
Now, Ben, the comments that were made that, you know, popped the market this morning, we ran up from down around 41 up to a high of around 59. That all happened pretty quickly off some positive
49,
comments.
49, you mean? 49.
Yeah, 49.
Well, no.
We ran up to 59.
Yeah, well, okay, after the comment.
The
yeah.
low was 41, and then we shot up to 59. Do you know by chance what the comments were? Not verbatim, but any general idea what they said? That...
Yeah, I do. I actually have the news release right in front of me. Basically, I think it was the Republicans saying that they're willing to negotiate and that they're willing to work.
Okay.
Hold on a second.
Because the point is, you know, we keep seeing on the screen, you know, they're counting down the number of days to the fiscal cliff and currently it's at 45, but as Art Cashin pointed out today, based on Congress's schedule, Congress is only in session another 12 days. They're only working 12 more days before the cliff, so it's 12, not 45.
Yeah, well, wouldn't you know, that's a good old American way, huh? Seems like nowadays to make it out to be one thing, but it's really another.
Yeah,
well, that would just increase volatility, I would think. Basically, they said that the Republicans emerged from a meeting at the White House on Friday saying that they were prepared to agree to additional revenue in order to avert harsh automatic year-end tax hikes and spending cuts as long as there's also reductions in spending. Boehner came in and said that to show our seriousness, we put revenue on the table as long as it's accompanied by significant spending cuts. Senate Minority Leader has also confirmed or offered conditional backing for new revenue. Let's see, it goes on further to say, we fully understand that we can't save the country until you have entitlement programs that fit the demographics of changing America in the coming years. We're prepared to put revenue on the table again in order to fix it, if to provide fix real problems. But, yeah, that was a strong move. But also, again, I didn't mention this a minute ago, is very little volume here associated with it. It was a lot of air, basically. Now, there might have been a lot of volume associated with it on the screen, but if that was, it was all high-frequency garbage. Basically, because one market uptick will buy this market. Another market upticks will buy. But in terms of real people that were trading it, I think it was somewhat limited in terms of participation.
Last hour on the minis, we traded 500,000 contracts.
In the minis.
Yeah, yeah. 496,000 contracts traded in 1 hour. That's like an opening hour. Okay, the opening hour today traded.
It's news related. And it's all high frequency.
Now,
my guess.
One of the guys in the audience says, here's a question for Ben. What will be the presumed effect on the financial markets if Israel does indeed embark in an all-out war in Gaza?
I don't know.
It takes gold higher, that's for certain, right?
I don't know. I would think gold higher, crude higher, but I don't really know, to be honest. I think any additional concerns, certainly the Middle East is weighing on the market right now as well. You know, I mean, it's not being ignored. But, you know, we went home on Wednesday night. I was actually short crude Wednesday in the afternoon session. It was chopping around right around that 86.30 level. Small risk up to like 86.70. And you know what? On Wednesday night, I got out of the trade because there's pictures of cars being blown up in the street. And who wants to be short crude when that's happened, you know? But crude, if you look at crude, I mean, clearly is establishing values of areas of value to the downside. I mean, look at the balance that we're in right now in crude. It's at least 20 days mature right now at this point. Crude's ready for a move in a big way. Gold's difficult to tell, but in terms of market direction in reaction to potential news or potential developments in the Middle East, I don't really know. Again, that's one of those situations where I have to jokingly say, if I knew, I certainly wouldn't be standing here on the phone right now.
Gotcha.
You know, I think that anyone who tells anyone that they do know what the market's going to do at that point is basically just voicing opinion and speculation, you know. So I try to avoid trading my opinion and try and trade the market more, you know, because I've done better that way. My opinion is that it would weigh on the market. And my opinion is that it's been one of the contributing factors to the downside already, concerns about it. So, you know,
David, do you have any questions
for
the
market? I don't think it's good for the market when it's happening in the Middle East.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's not good for any of us. David, do you have any questions for Ben?
Hey, Dwayne?
No, yes, Ben, I'm right here. Just that I agree with Ben. I'm sorry, did you say something, Dwayne?
I think Bert started to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys should point out today's low is a 0.618% retracement off the high. 1340, 1341, that was a big level. So ironically, it came in at the same spot where we had that energy off the low. So something to kind of circle on your chart. And Dwayne, when you get a chance, you can pull up a daily and draw the fibs on it.
I will.
Yeah, I think that's an important level. And but for the record, every one of those important levels on the way down of the last 8 days.
Right. Yeah.
So again, it's only an important level in hindsight, you know.
Right. True.
But yes, no. Don't get me wrong. There was energy off that low. You cannot if you're avoiding and not considering activity similar to what we saw off that low. You're not going to last long, but again, my thought is just that in the bigger picture, when you look at the fact that we've come off of 1430 in the last 8 days, 9 days,
yeah.
I don't think a news-related move up like that really, really reverses the longer-term trend of the downside. So,
yeah, all I was going to mention is that I'm in agreement with that idea, that the market, although it may have completed a number of different kinds of price targets, Fibonacci and whatnot, that the trend is likely going to be for lower prices for a little while more anyway, and that this is simply a bounce in an ongoing downtrend. That's all this is. That's
sure,
a fact.
Sure.
I mean, that's
sure.
that's just what it is.
Sure.
So.
So yeah, I think V bottoms are extremely unlikely, just like V tops. They happen. Don't get me wrong, but I bet against them for the most part. You know, if it was balancing on these lower levels and then caught a bit of out of that balance and then formed another balance up above, well, then I'd start to wait. But at this point, I'm just kind of looking through it like that. But like I said, guys, we're all right now just not going to get energy more than anything else goes down here. We don't really care up or down for the most part. Just bring the energy, you know? So you guys keep it up. Keep clicking.
All right, buddy. Thank you, Ben.
Hey, Ben.
Thank you, Ben.
Everybody launched, have a great weekend.
Hey, Ben, hang on. You launched a new – did you launch your iPhone app yet?
Oh, yeah. iPhone app is out. You guys got to check it out big time. Go to the iTunes store or app store and just click Traders Audio. You'll see it right there. We all kinds of information there. Basically, market updates, support resistance numbers, newsletters are posted there for the grains, the Forex. The bonds, the S&Ps, I mean, all of our broadcasters are contributing to the app right now in audio and text format. Intraday, on a daily basis, there's a wealth of information there, guys, and I don't mean to exaggerate it. I'm just telling you again, for $2.99, the app is a great buy, basically. If you ever have any interest in looking at the market with mobile capacity and, you know, interest in doing that, it's excellent. There's webinars that we've done on there. And just a lot of information.
Is readily it available in iOS? Is it available in iOS and Android?
It's only available on for iPhone right now.
Okay.
We're working on Android and
about the iPad?
Just for the iPhone and iPad.
iPad, it is good for the iPad. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll put a link to the app in the blog tonight. Okay.
Much appreciated.
All
big
right.
time. You guys have a wonderful weekend.
You too, Ben. Thanks so much.
You too,
okay,
Ben.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. See you, Ben.
Guys, go pay Ben a visit over at tradersaudio.com. He's been squawking the market since I was in short pants. That's a mighty long time. So check him out. And
can
they, you know, it used to be just the S&P 500, but now he squawks metals. He squawks crude, grains. He's got a lot going on. TradersAudio.com. If you've never been there, you'll be invited to take a 3-day free trial, I believe it is. And you can hear the live voices and energy coming off the pit, the roar of the crowd. It's more of a whimper compared to the roar that it used to be, but it's still interesting. So check it out. TradersAudio.com. Our good friend, Ben Lichtenstein. All right. Robin, I hear your voice. Good morning to you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just didn't think I've had so much technical trouble.
Go right ahead.
I didn't know. I was on there, so yeah, it was great to hear Ben. I was listening to the commentary on the television, since that's the only thing I had this morning, and they were, it looks like they're trying to come together. It looks like each side is throwing out a bone of, okay, you know, we really feel that the American people have to see that we can work together. I mean, that's kind of what it looked like. But like you said, there's a real short timeline here that I don't know if they can pull it off. You know, again, it's just a bunch of promises and each side willing to concede a little bit here and there. And I don't know if they can do it. We'll see. It'll be interesting.
Well, David, what's your take on it all?
Well, let's take a look. I don't know, Dwayne. It's Friday. First of all, the end of a pretty important week overall in the markets. And, yeah, you know, I agree with Ben entirely that we're inside a longer term, you know, not super long term, but a longer term downtrend that is likely going to run into December with the usual back and forth and all that. It's possible that it can come 1 month early, which does happen in sharp decline sometimes. But I would be very careful, like we've been suggesting since November 8th, for everyone to, you know, when they broke, I forgot what the level was, I don't have it right in front of me, but when they broke the critical level, 1404 or whatever it was, that indicated that the market was going to drop to 1357, That was part of a roadmap, and we're trading near those levels right now, coming up from even lower levels. So I believe the market, since that point, we've talked about the idea that the market's going to continue down into the month of December. I like the idea if you want to trade on the long side intraday, but I don't like the idea of any long-term overnight positions at all for the S&P, in spite of what may happen, until we get closer to December. That's just my take on it. I'm probably more conservative than many. And I, you know, that's my particular way of doing things, but I think it would be wise to be very careful. And I do like the idea of selling rallies, like this one here, the fast snapback rally. you know, you have to learn how to not concern yourself with the crowd and what people are saying. It's so easy to get caught up in the enthusiasm or the excitement of someone else's, you know, thrill meter, you know, going off. Oh, the bottom's in, you know, or whatever, like Ben was talking about. If you surround yourself with that, it gets very more and more difficult to take direction from your own insight, because everyone's yelling and screaming their insight to you. So if you have somebody like a Ben that you like and who himself, he understands the crowd mentality and the whole business of, you know, people getting excited and saying, oh, it's this or it's that, you know, then you listen to that and you follow that. Or you just trade by your own light entirely. And it takes some time to get that little light to be bright enough for you to believe in it and trade it and know what you're looking for. That takes the time and energy of, to be honest, many years. It does. Some people are very, very talented at trading right out of the box, but it's probably, you know, it's probably good to count on a few years of practice, trial and error to get yourself into. I'm talking about not being able to, you can do it successfully before then, but I'm saying in general, before you really have your own light fully burning and you really have a grasp on what it is that works for you particularly. It's going to take some years to doing this, just like it does in just about any other profession. You got to be around it. You got to get dirty in it. You got to mess up in it. You got to do good in it. You got to mix it all up. And then finally you find out who you are and what you like. Just like in real life, you know, with other areas, just like meeting people over time and, you know, being in business with somebody or being in a, you know, male-female relationship or any of these things that you've done over and over again, it takes time. And the markets are like that. Markets are as big as life. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if Dwayne were gonna do that topic today, but it fits right into that particular thing. I don't know if you wanted to do that later on or if you wanted to hold off till next week. But it's the overwhelm that new traders go into when they go to take this on as a new career for themselves. And and you're right. They, you know, the expectation is that they can pick it up really quickly, but they can go into what you were describing earlier. I call it the lemming syndrome, you know, where they just, one goes off the cliff and the other one just keeps following, you know. And you have to be really, really careful and establish your own trading criteria, even though you may be learning from other people. Because you have a different way of interpreting the market. You can look at the same screen as everybody else is looking at, and you can actually interpret it and see it differently. And so by, you know, following a methodology, that's why I'm really, really fussy about people asking questions when they're in any kind of training. So if you're doing training with Michael or you're doing any kind of training with any other people, David, you go to David's course, you want to ask a bazillion questions because your goal is to get on their wavelength. They are seeing the market a certain way, but you can put all bunch of people in the room looking at the same screen and you're going to see something different. So key thing is get on the same wavelength and ask questions, tons of them. There's no bad question. And in fact, most of the questions don't get asked, and I put $100 on if you ask a question, there's somebody else out there that's got the same question. The questions are going to give you power, and oh, by the way, it increases the learning curve. It makes it faster. So the more questions you ask, the faster you go forward and get really, really focused. And again, pick up your own style. No, don't just blindly take a trade because somebody else said, oh, yeah, take a trade. You can try it that way, go in demo mode, but you know, you run the risk. And if you lose, then you're the only one to blame.
Mm-hmm. Yep, got to take responsibility for your own actions. Yeah, let's start that next Friday. I had sent you an email, Robin.
Okay.
We'll start that next Friday, and we'll do it probably the last 30 minutes of the broadcast each and every Friday.
Okay, perfect.
And speaking of that Lemming guy, he really was good in the new Skyfall movie, Ian Lemming. 007. Oh, wait, that's Fleming. Oh, I'm sorry.
Ian Fleming, yeah.
Frank.
Right,
give me another ticket to the amusement park. Come on. All right, where do you want to go now?
Well, I'll tell you a couple quick things. You know, just finishing up on the S&P here, I still like the idea of selling rallies. So, you know, we're going to have the bounces and whatnot on the way down. I do have a couple things that we can watch that I think might be important coming into the end of the year. So remember, these are bigger picture things. These are not something that are just for today. But the original target that we had talked about on the downside, talking about the break, the 14.0 whatever, and down to 13.57, the roadmap for that. That 1357 level, 1355, whatever, right in that area is actually going to be important for the yearly close. When we finish out this year in late December, where the market is at that time. I'm going to judge the market as in a weaker position if we are below that level and a stronger position if we are above that level. I would not rule out, this is not an outright forecast, but I would not rule out the market continuing lower and testing or attempting 1320 to 1315 on the downside. I know that's a 5-point range. It's different than we normally talk in, but I'm giving this as a general thing. I would not rule that out. So when Ben was on and saying, well, he thinks the thing is still going down, I agree with him, and I think there is the possibility of substantially lower prices yet prior to the ending of this decline. So that's the bigger picture for us. But in all cases, we believe that December, for the most part, unless something very unusual happens, we think that December is going to mark a very important bottom in the S&P 500. So that's where we're headed. And I don't like the idea of anything longer than an intraday long position for traders until we get into December. That's my thing. I'd rather see people just take short positions. If you're going to hold shorts on the overnight, I'm fine with that if you're shorting from critical levels and so on. But I don't like the idea of holding on the long side because you can get yourself in trouble, the market can have a wide open break, and so on. And then all of your Achilles heels are going to be tested. And some days you wake up and the test is easy to pass, and some days it's not so easy. Rather than trade in a manner that always is testing your Achilles heels, trade in a manner that doesn't always test them. How's that for an idea? Just don't do the things. If you're married, don't go to a bar where girls are dancing naked. Just don't test yourself that way. Don't put yourself into a position where you would have to make the decision while your Achilles heel is being tested. And that's really true in trading as well. Just don't put yourself in that position as best as you can. There's going to be times where those things happen. So you have to deal with it one way or the other. So intraday, we were trying to short. We still have a short entry up here at the 5725 level. We were trying to get short because we think this is an important juncture up here where the market would turn. For those of you who have reflected wave, which is our turning point methodology, you know what we're talking about here with regard to the top. And so we're trying to trade off of that. And we'll see if they, as we're talking about going over markets, about if they're able to continue. But the last thing I want to say is just sort of repeating that on a much longer term time frame, although we're talking about a December bottom, I think it's very important to consider the fact or the possibility, because we believe it's the case that lower prices are coming and that you should be careful with the long side until we get closer to the month of December. And that's basically everything I have for the S&P right now, other than our shorter term things, which the trades and whatnot on Messenger Pro. I also wanted to mention one other thing, Dwayne. Somebody had mentioned something about, you were talking about it, I think, Dwayne, about, you know, people being paid a certain amount of money. Were you talking about Jeff Bezos from Amazon?
Yeah, is that what it was? Amazon.com, one of the, I've been saying of late, just, you know, half seriously, but I don't know, I guess with Steve Jobs gone, I see Jeff Bezos as one of the really bright guys out there. Forbes named him Business Person of the Year today. And yeah, mm-hmm. I was talking about how he has structured his company and how he hasn't really followed the model of a lot of the tech startups, the Googles who provide, you know, free meals and a workout center and all mm-hmm. of these other things. I'm not saying those things aren't cool. They are. If you work there, obviously you enjoy them. But he has built his business more along the lines of the traditional business model. You know, you just simply show up every day, you work hard, you get a fair pay for the work done. He does believe in rewarding people, and he does that via restricted stock units. The second guy in command at Amazon, I mean, because we're used to hearing about these CEOs and these enormous sums of money and salaries that they make. The second in command over there at Amazon, his salary is $155,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
He has accumulated $20 million in restricted stock units, but his salary is $155,000.
Yeah, and the various companies manage that balance. Obviously, they're not going to get really good talent for $155,000, and don't take that in a that's not a discount to people, because $155,000 is a great salary. But they split it up in whichever way they want. You either get stock options or some combination of cash and so on. And Steve Jobs himself actually took very, very little money out of the company, and he paid himself, you know, had enormous sums of Apple stock, and that's how he paid. Remember, he was doing the dollar a year thing and so on. In one way or the other, the executives are well paid for, and I just was going to say that I've heard people my whole life talk about the overpay, enormous sums, and so on that these executives get. But I can give you a list of 10. I don't have them right in front of me, but I have several executives that have earned every last penny of whatever their executive bonus package and stock options and cash payments were, that have made enormously profitable decisions for the company. And one of which is the fellow that ran Porsche. Porsche back in 1998 was almost out of business, the sports car company in Germany. And this is a family-owned company, and they took this fellow in, Wunderkind, I can't remember his last name exactly, something like that. And he came in, and he was brilliant enough to see that the SUV was going to be the next big thing for high-end sports car companies. And they led the way with the Porsche Cayenne and the Porsche whatever all the different models are for these SUVs. The best-selling car in Porsche's lineup is an SUV. It beats out by all other measures, all other sports cars that they make. So the company turned around on a dime, and it has enormous, vast fortunes now based on this one man's decision. And there's many, many other examples of this. All I'm really saying is that sometimes a guy can be paid a lot of money and he's not worth much, but I'm telling you that in general, when a person gets up to that level, these people are doing things that very few people are capable of doing, and that is managing a large company, making very, very important decisions, making a lot of right decisions, you know, the things we talk about here, consistently following through on those decisions, and managing the trouble and little bumps along the way. Even though you made the right decision, doesn't mean you're not going to have some little bump along the way, right? So these people are able to do that, keep everything running, manage through all that stuff. They earn enormous pay. They are really paid what they're worth. And that kind of talent is not walking around on every street corner. You have to realize everybody has some knack, some talent, some specialty, some something that they're able to do. Don't begrudge these people because of the dollar amount. Don't be blinded by the dollar amount. Many of these people are like the Steve Jobs and the Jeff Bezos and others who have great vision and great ability to put that vision into motion. I know a tremendously talented guitarist. This is a different guy than the guy that I normally talk about, who has no work. He hasn't worked practically his whole adult life because he has tremendous talent, tremendous vision musically, but he lacked in another area, which was the area that he would have to get up, get out, and really somehow promote this and get himself into the situations of life that would, you know, follow through for him and get him up into the stratosphere. So it really is quite a thing for somebody to have both the vision, both the ability to enact that vision, get others to believe in that vision, to be right about the vision. Oh my goodness, you know, all the way down the line, these people earn what they earn because they're worth it, and the companies wouldn't pay it out unless they were. And sometimes, yes, you can always point to the example where the guy made millions of dollars and the company did bad and he was not really very good at what he did. That's going to happen on every level of everything. I'm talking about in general. Don't begrudge these people who make huge salaries because they're running huge companies, because in most cases, they really do have some very unique talent. It's just, it's no different. It really is no different than looking at a great basketball player. And you think, well, my God, he gets $17 million a year. For what? Right? I mean, you've heard people say that. Well, go try and do what he does. Go stand on the court and see if you can deal in real time with all the situations that come up in a basketball game and do the right thing and accomplish it. It's an amazing thing. It really is something to be admired. And that's why they get the big money. Same thing with the big business people and so on. The Wall Street crowd, or whatever, you know, what are they called? The Wall Street, the people who want to, you know, destroy corporations and stop everybody making money is
easy.
Occupy Wall Street. These people are in a completely different world where they don't appreciate any of the talents that brought America to this point. And I don't know what their vision of America is, but it doesn't include, obviously, people who have talent and can run big concerns, that as soon as something becomes a corporation to them, it's become evil. And a corporation is simply a legal entity. That's all it really is. It's a legal entity that allows you to do business under that umbrella. And they've gotten to the point where they begrudge. And I think there's quite a bit of that sentiment from the Wall Streeters, the Occupy Wall Streeters, in the current administration. That sour kind of tone of looking at success with, but, you know, he had to step on the little people or whatever. There's something's always wrong with success when the very origins of our country are based upon hard work. Put your nose to the grindstone, make your best effort, rise to your best occasion, rise to your own potential. And if somebody rises higher than you are, even if you don't celebrate it, you're not going to start a group to denigrate it. And that's where we are now in this country. Groups are being formed to denigrate the very success of people who, but for many of them, you wouldn't be able to text out your hateful message about how success is so evil and how corporations are so evil and so on and so on. I'd like to see you, Mr. and Mrs. Wall Streeter, start your own little city. Go off and start your own little city, your own little country, and we'll see how that runs for you. Okay?
Bring a porta potty.
Yeah, bring a porta potty while you're there.
Well, you know, one of the issues, yeah, there's a lot of great CEOs that make, you know, enormous sums of money, and a lot of it has to do with their connections and their background and who they went to school with, and they do have the ability to go behind closed doors and do some negotiations and, you know, get some deals done because of their associations, but, you know, they don't do it alone. They're supported by a staff of, if they succeed in their efforts, they're supported by a really good staff underneath.
Absolutely.
Them, you know, from their administrative assistant all the way down to the factory worker on the plant floor, and it really is a team effort. You know, I heard somebody tell the story the other day. He was speaking about his own father. No, I think it was his grandfather, who was on the board of directors of, oh boy, I was going to make myself remember. Anyway, he was on the board of directors of this major company. It's a household word. Everybody knows it. And when he was a kid growing up, he would see his grandfather head off to, you know, these semi-annual board of directors meetings. And there would be an a plane at the airport standing by, waiting to fly his grandfather to San Francisco for this board meeting, right? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, there would be jets standing by at five other airports in America to pick up those board members to fly them to San Francisco so they could have this meeting. And then the jets would, of course, continue to stand by at San Francisco Airport waiting for them to finish their meeting a couple hours later and take them back home. But they would go to the meeting, and the topic of the meeting, for example, would be, can we afford to give our employees a 50 cents an hour raise? Mm-hmm. And the foregone conclusion is, no, we just flew six guys on private jets across America. We can't afford to give them a raise. And so motion is carried. Everybody gets back in their town car, goes back to their jet that's standing by to take them home. And there they hang until the next board meeting. Now, this was a number of years ago when he was relating this experience, and I know that we have cool things now like GoToWebinar and all this other stuff, and a lot of meetings get done that way. But those meetings back then, that he watched this transpire as he was growing up, and it sort of shaped who he became as an angry young rock artist, singing and traveling and backpacking through Europe and making his mark on the world. Because he saw this as a colossal waste of money, and it prevented those poor line employees from ever getting their 50 cent an hour raise. And I know there's you can argue, both sides of that thing can be argued very eloquently. These are very important men, and you know their decisions carry a lot of weight, and blah, blah. I understand that. But sometimes you look at some of the things that corporate America does, and you can't help but think, my goodness, they're modeling themselves after our government. There's a lot of waste at that upper echelon. I'm sure you heard the very sad news today about the Twinkie, right? Did you?
Yeah, I did. I actually, I haven't even thought about Twinkies in a long time. And
did you go buy one?
No, I think they're going to be sold on eBay now for a lot of money.
Exactly. Well, I want to rush out to the store and try to get one at least to put up on the shelf, because they have a shelf life of, I don't know, forever, I think. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, Hostess, guys, if those of you who haven't heard,
yeah.
Hostess, they went bankrupt like four times trying to salvage the company, but maybe they just weren't able to hire a smart enough CEO.
Hostess is its own company, or is it a brand of a company?
No, I think Hostess is its own standalone company.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
okay.
Part of the blame is being put on the unions. There were so many bizarre union concessions that were made over the years that, like, certain drivers could only deliver certain products. So you might have to send out two trucks to make a delivery to one grocery store. Because this union group over here had a special concession to deliver the Hostess banana-filled whatever. You know, it was just bizarre.
Sure. It's got to be, we've heard about that kind of thing before.
So, there's a million knockoffs of the Twinkie now, so no one's sweet tooth will go unsweetened or unsatiated. But, we all grew up with that brand. Hostess.
Oh, we did. There's no question about it. It is kind of sad, and it's just it is a sign of the times. Hostess wasn't going to be able, even if they could make it, they weren't going to make it if they were going to have to pay all their employees Obamacare. And they weren't going to make it if they were on top of that, we're going to have to also pay higher taxes, and so on and so on. This is, I'm not blaming it all on Obama. I'm just saying even if they had pulled through, that was going to be their next. We talked about this yesterday. That's the next big hit that's coming to businesses here. All the points you made about the corporations wasting money, absolutely. The people at the high end, it's just part of the nature of the deal that there's perks and all kinds of things that go on there. I'm really addressing anyway, even though that stuff does happen, and not in every company, by the way.
Right.
But no, that does happen. But my point is simply that there really is such a thing as talent that you may not have recognized, you being anybody, may not have recognized yet, in running a company. It's not just a buffoon in a suit. These people have to make very important, consistently right decisions in order for the company to do well. Try running your own business and see for yourself what it is just to run your own business, let alone run a business that may have hundreds, thousands, or even 10,000 employees that you're managing and catching the new wave of where things are going. It's not easy to do. And these people, you know, there's awards for these people, and those awards are in the form of stock options, money, and so on.
Yeah, I got I got news for anybody. Running your own business is the toughest job you'll ever have.
Yeah.
Trust me. Is that the truth?
You know, I have a friend of mine who used to always say, because I many, many years ago, I had an office in Los Angeles, even though I'm based out of Las Vegas here. This was a different business. And he used to always say to me, well, I really want to be able to sit in the big chair. And what that meant was he wanted to be able to sit in the manager's office.
Yeah.
And that always meant to me that he wasn't the right guy for that job, because he was thinking about the perks first, and he wasn't coming to me and saying, this is the vision I have, or this is the thing I think I can do, and this is where I think we can take this. He wanted to sit in the chair. That's not the reason to be there. The chair is only there because the person sitting in it's making really good decisions, and he gets a really nice chair or whatever.
He wanted to just put out the orders.
Yeah, he wanted to put out the orders, and the people that really get this stuff right aren't doing that. They may look like they're doing that, but they're making really well thought out decisions in most cases to keep these corporations and big businesses running. Go check it out for yourself if you don't believe it. Most of these guys, I know there's always exceptions, but most of these guys are earning every penny that they make, and they do just the same thing for their company that some great basketball player does for his team. There's really no difference. Go ahead, Robin.
No, I just was going to say, you're absolutely right. It's just, it's hard work. I mean, and it's a 24/7 job.
Right. No doubt. It's like, again, it's like a guy running a successful farm. Take a farmer. Everyone feels sorry for farmers. Everyone loves to hold the farmer up because the farmer is, you know, it's just got a nice picture to it. It's a nice mental picture, and he's out there working his field and so on. That's what running a business is you're working your field, you're out there, you're toiling in the dirt, you're moving things around. I'm not saying anything bad about farmers, but I'm saying it's just like that in business. It's you've got this lay of the land in front of you. You've got certain things that have to actually happen in order for your business to continue running. You've got certain machinery in place to make those things happen. You have to get people to operate that machinery to make it happen, and so on. And then you've got regulations and other bits and pieces that you have to deal with. It's just like that. It's just the farmer, you know, he's got his situation, and it's there's a lot more romance, of course, associated with that. And I love the farmer just as much as I love anybody else in business and, you know, trying to make these things work. But I'm just pointing out that I'm just making the analogy that running a business in the very, very real way is just like a person running a farm. And just by the way, just want to make one other point, and then we'll get on to the markets here. One of the other things that's going to happen with the current administration is that we're going to see the revival of the 50 to 60% death tax. You worked your whole life, you saved your money up, you paid your taxes on it, you put the remainder into your savings so that you could give it to your children, and so that money's been paid. The taxes has been paid on that money, and now your final days are here and you die, and the government's got their hand out for 60% of what you earned, paid taxes on, and the little bit that you were able to save over a lifetime, they're going to take 60% from you. The only way you could like that idea is if you're a far-left loon, period. There's no other way you could ever justify taking from a person his life savings, 60% of his life savings. If you like that, you're a loon, period. You're nuts. And the only people that do like that are nuts.
I agree violently, but I got this image of a loon duck.
Oh, all right. Well, I'll work with you on that.
You know,
but you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. I do agree that it is crazy. It is very, you know, left of center. But also, figuring out a way around that, I mean, how smart do you have to be? I don't think.
Right.
I don't think.
Exactly. How smart do you have to be? It's a great question to figure a way around doing that to people. And, you know, I don't care that there's really rich people that say that they would like to do that. They have enough money so that their kids will go on and everyone will get what they want, even with the 60%. That's the kind of thinking that we have with this administration. And that's why, for the next 4 years, keep an eye on where your wallet is, because they're coming for it. I know they're protecting the middle class. You wait
can't
and
afford
see
to die
how much protection
next,
you have.
You can't afford to die for the next 4 years. That's what.
Yeah, try not dying for a while here, because you won't be able to.
Well, Kevin's a farmer. He wanted to share that. He says he's in the chat room. He says it's a good life. It's a lot of hard work. And now he's talking about a death blow that was dealt to farmers. We own a lot of land and equipment. We will have to get life insurance just to cover the death tax. Elaborate on that a little bit, Kevin, and I'll come back to it.
I'm going to say something about that as well, that the farmer happens to be in a particularly bad situation, because often the farmer's net worth is based upon land, equipment, and future production and so on, and the government is rating that as what you have. And so when that farmer passes on, all of that dollar amount is now considered as taxable at 55 or 60%, and therefore the farm can't continue to operate. The farm has to go away because they have to sell the business in order to pay the death tax. And so maybe what he's talking about is there's some form of insurance that they have to help pay that death tax off, but in some way you have to buy that insurance as well, and so on. So it's very messy, and you know, just remember, this administration, they're really for the little guy, remember? That's what their big thing is. They're for the little guy. Show me the little guy that you're for. Show me the little guy that's being helped by you. And you were saying something other earlier today about the commissions and, you know, that people should be paid on productivity and so on.
Right.
That's very good, I believe. And here's another thing I believe. If you want, you know, we take illegal immigrants in this country and we ship them out. And I know we have laws for illegal and they should come in legally and so on. Here's my rule. If you're not, if you are capable of being productive and are not, I'd like to ship you out of America. How's that? I'd like, if you're getting a check and sitting on your behind and doing nothing and living off this, the toil of other people, I want you to leave America. I want you to be shipped to some other country where you have to live a different kind of life. Because I've had enough of you being here, taking advantage of that. And we're in an administration right now, to be quite blunt, that encourages that very type of behavior. That's how they won the election. You're going to get a whole bunch of stuff from us. The second level, you know, of what they're, what the whole pitch was we're going to help you out. We're going to give you things. You're going to get checks. And that's what he's doing. There's a really good reason that there's 47 million people on food stamps right now. And part of it is because we have a bad economy. And part of it is because it's being handed out and advertised as, you know, free money. And fine, I'm happy for the people that have it for a little while. But I got news for you. America is not going to stay a great country if we shift away from put your nose to the grindstone, do a long, hard day's work, have a vision, follow that vision, and don't destroy other people's success because you didn't get your piece of it. Go make your own success. And so, you know, that's a little bit that I wanted to add to your bit about the...
This is still America, the American dream. It may be heavily taxed and have health benefits attached to it, but the American dream is still alive and well. I know
it is.
No other place where you, whoever you are, can go out and with a little bit of what you just talked about, hard work and an idea, and maybe you need somebody to believe in you, you know, enough so that you have some startup capital, but it can still be done. I mean, there's a lot of places on planet Earth where that's not even a possibility. And so even if you never develop that great product or that great company or that great idea, the fact that you were able to live your life in pursuit of that, that in itself is huge. That gives meaning to life. Sitting on the couch and watching Jerry Springer, oh, that's just depressing.
Yeah.
And
that'll take you, but
you know what I want to know is, will these court cases be overturned? The ones that were won based on the Twinkie defense, now that Hostess is defunct,
you're talking about the San Francisco deal years ago.
The Twinkie defense.
No, we're going to have to come up with a ho-ho defense.
The ho-ho defense. Okay. Cliff says that the current estate tax is 45%. On 3.5 million and more.
Okay. actually, the administration wants to bring it down from states greater than 5 million down to great states greater than 1 million. So, and they want to raise it from 35% to 55%. If they got their way, remember we've talked about the thing about, boy, what if they got their way? What would this place look like if they just got everything? Anyway, one of the things it would look like is if your state's over $1 million, you're getting 55% of your stuff goes to the government. They just get it. Not because they earned it, not because you owe it to them, they just get it. I think that's a bad thing for America, bad thing for Americans. If you like it, you know, that you and I aren't going to be getting along too well. All right. Let's move on to, I think what Cliff was talking about is where they may compromise at the 3.5 million and so on. And so, I don't care what amount of money you make. I don't think it has anything to do with any part of how much money you have. What a disgusting way to look at it. It's somebody's life savings after he paid his taxes. Should he not be able to pass that on to his heirs without you sticking your grubby hand in there and taking 60% of it? I don't care what the dollar amount is. It's not yours for the taking, you know, Mr. Government.
Hey, we have Cliff who said he would like to come on and say something. So, Cliff, I'm going to open up your mic. Are you there? I should have given you some warning, I guess.
Cliff is climbing through a forest there. He's
I'm trying to get my mic set.
I'm sorry, Cliff. I should have typed in, yes, you may come on, and in, you know, a count of five, I'll turn on your mic. I'll do that next time. But
that's just, quite all right.
It's just fun to
yes, it was. It was news this morning that a compromise from 5 million down to 3.5 million, taxed at 45%, would be the new death tax or estate tax, as it is known. I spent some few years in the insurance industry and did go into estate planning, and estate planning is basically compromised of looking at an individual's net worth from all avenues and then trying to find enough insurance to pay for those future death taxes. And it's the problematic part of it is that these people are caught in a conundrum that is just unworkable. Most of the time, the values that they have attained in their lifetime of work that would put them into this bracket of death tax that their heirs will be forced to pay. Usually, that takes a lifetime of working. Sometimes, like the farmer, from before daylight to well after dark, and by the time these people reach an age to where the death tax is prominent in their mind, then you look at insurance coverage to pay these enormous death taxes, and the premium is so much so that they can't even afford the day-to-day operations of their farm were they to engage in that. So farmers who own massive lays of land or for example, some of the people in South Louisiana that have oil well interest and the future production of those oil wells are taken into the valuation on these death or estate taxes, are so much so that it just becomes an impossible deal for them to find enough insurance, either because of health or because of age, and the premiums are so high that the inevitable outcome of it is that the heirs have to wind up cutting these farms down to non-productive size or selling off the assets of oil well accumulation or whatever to where it's just an infeasible thing to be done. It's absolutely ludicrous. And in my own way of thinking, it's ludicrous for us to have a death tax in the first place, something that you pay taxes on your income all your life for whatever you can build, be it great or small, and then at death you penalize the heirs of that valuation with a estate tax.
Right, and Cliff, just to throw this in, and I just want to say that along the way, that money, those assets, whenever they made money from having those assets, that money was taxed as well. So along the way, as you're accumulating your money, you're paying taxes on your income, you're putting it away, and it is now producing income in the form of interest or dividends or whatever, that's also taxed, and you're paying your tax along the way on that income. And finally, in the end, the pot that's left there, they want 60% of that. And in many cases, I just was going to say one other thing, and I want to hear from you, that in some cases, there's different. This can happen in a number of different ways. Forget the death tax. There are taxes which are more legitimate. If somebody gives you, there's a thing called a gift tax. So if you come to my company, and you remember when Dwayne gave away an iPad or something a while back. Well, let's say you give away something of real value to somebody. Somebody wins a car in a game show or something like that. Well, in many, many cases, the person has to sell the car in order to pay in cash the tax on the gift. So the gift tax, when somebody gives you a gift, and the tax lady can confirm this, it's you want the person who's giving the gift to pay the tax on it. Otherwise, it's not really that much of a gift, because in many cases you have to pay taxes and you may not have the money to pay it. You win a $50,000 car, that's considered $50,000 worth of income. You might owe $20,000 or whatever it is, $15,000 on that. You don't have that to pay, so you have to sell the car.
That's so true. And for example, and I don't know if this has changed in the past year or two, but a gift tax to your own children can only be in the amount of $10,000 per year per child. Otherwise, you go into another taxed situation.
And, right.
And of course, that is to keep people from giving away their assets and getting past a taxable situation. But there are limits in that, too. When you think about it, we work all of our lives as hard as we can to build what we can and are taxed on the income as it grows year by year. And then if we try to give it away, we're taxed again. If we try to hold on to it and pass it to our heirs, then we are taxed on it again. And I used to have a figure in mind, but I can't think of what it is now. But what the overall tax rate for an individual, a wealthy individual, is just astronomical.
Mm-hmm. But it's very taxing.
You know, there's nothing that can be done, and of course, for years we've been kicking the can down the road. We all know that the tax system needs to be revised, and it needs to be put in some fair order. But just as usual, this thing has been kicked down the road, and here we are faced with looking at tax proposals changing once again. But you can bet one thing. They're not going to change for the individual to the betterment of the individual. They're going to change to the betterment of the government.
There you are. I want a little trumpet fanfare. That was well said.
That was extremely well said. And if the studio audience, oh, here they come.
Once again, thanks for the mic. You guys go ahead.
Cliff, thank you. Love to have you anytime.
And all right, guys, I'm going to finish this Twinkie real quick, and then we'll get on to the
market. You finish your Twinkie. And, guys, if you've not read, if you've not been to our opinion page, there are some opinions over there, and it's starting to grow. And we got a new guy coming. This guy was in law enforcement. He was forced to retire early due to health reasons. He's got this medical marijuana issue that has the nation's attention. He brings a real interesting perspective to this story because he was involved in major crimes, drug rings, etc. And he writes, so this guy, just the emails he sends me, I'm going to start putting those up as his posts until he gets back after Thanksgiving and actually starts writing. I'm really looking forward to this. His name is Brad, so watch for that. But in the meantime, Cliff has written some really nice pieces. They're on the opinion page. Frank has done some nice work. We've got some others there. Go check those out if you haven't. Anywhere on CFRN, on the right-hand side of the page, just click opinion. It'll take you there. We're just getting that going, and if you have something you want to get off your chest, you have an opinion that you want to share, maybe you don't have a great radio voice like me, so you just want to hammer it out on the keyboard, by all means, do it. You know, it can be market-related, it can be about life, politics, family, whatever. You name it, you call it, send it to me, I'll review it, and I'll let you know if I think it's something that will work for us, and we'll start publishing your work. So just send an email to support, or no, send this one. If you're going to send it to opinion at CFRN.net, anything you want to write, just say, hey, here's a sample of my writing, what do you think? Send it over, and I'll get right back to you as quickly as I can. All right, David, are we done with this?
We're ready to go. I got it off my chest. I feel better. I'm looking forward to the weekend now. I won't need to see my psychiatrist. I think I can go drug-free over the weekend. So I'm ready to go.
Good for you, man. Good for you. Don't forget your massage.
Oh, good. That's right. That's too. That's very important.
Don't forget that.
All right. So we've covered the S&P. We've finished up on that. And I'll just briefly recap to say we think, generally speaking, we're going to see, with the usual bounces, lower prices into December. And be careful with the S&P on the long side. All right, so we'll move on. We have a few other markets of interest today. Gold, we've talked about this a number of times. Until further notice, we like the long side. The last, for those of you with Reflected Wave, you know about the November 9th top that was called for by Reflected Wave for a multi-day decline. The market had a kind of halting start to that and then really started to get underway here. The markets can be tricky. You know, if you look at the daily chart, we've now been down about 5 or 6 days from that. And we're looking for higher prices into January. So we believe that the market is bullish into January. This doesn't, it's not an astrological thing or something like that. Nothing wrong with that kind of viewpoint, but we just believe that a couple of things. Number one, that this administration is bullish on gold because there's a great deal of uncertainty with all the changes and various things that are coming up that this administration will impose on business, society in general, et cetera. So that's uncertainty, and uncertainty is what makes gold, it's one of the factors that makes gold move well. A person could say, well, gosh, from the election forward, let's see, what date was the election? It rallied up into the election, basically November 8th and 9th was the date that we were calling for. And we've had a bit of a sell-off here from the date of the election. Nothing big, but we'll talk about this market as we continue on because January, you know, even though in some scales it's not that very far away, on a day-to-day basis it's quite a distance. So we'll continue to talk about gold. But I like the idea of looking for buying opportunities in gold. And we'll talk about that as we continue on. We think higher prices are coming into January for gold. So let's move on from there. One thing I will say – oh, go ahead, Dwayne.
You know, I just wanted to point out, guys, on the gold here, you can see there was this little double top right here back in October. Let's see. This was – now, I'm actually on a weekly chart. So this would have been October of last year. We got up over 1,800. And then in March of this year, we got back up to this 1,800. And now let me scroll right here, or attempt to scroll right. There you go. And now you can see that we, that top that David just spoke about, that the election kind of rallied us into, we hit that 1,800 again. We've now, as David just said, sold off over the last 5-6 days. We did have a nice bounce yesterday. Here's our last week. This is a weekly chart. So last week we had a pretty good bounce. David, this 1,800 figure that we've run into, this will be, you see, 1, 2, 3. As we head up, this will be the fourth time we've tried to get above 1,800 and hold. Do you think we will be able to, do you think we'll get on this run, do you think we'll get above it?
Well, I'll tell you something. Rather than making a forecast, the thing that I like about this, and this is sort of a trader's viewpoint of it, is that because we're expecting a top in January, and January is really a full 2 months away, with regard to the fact that, you know, you can run all the way through January to January 30th, right? So that's, you know, it's an easy full 2 months away. We are really only calling for a relatively nearby price, I might as well say it, 1760 on the upside, into January. So that's all they really have to do. That's quite a bit of time for them to get there. We're sitting at 1714 now, so 1760 is not very far away. So here's my point. My point is that we've got quite a bit of time for the market to make a relatively small movement. And because of that, it means that there's the possibility that a much larger move would occur. So rather than forecast, I mean, it's a perfectly fair question, you know, do you think it's going to break out? My answer would be, I'd like to be long just in case it does, because there's plenty of opportunity between now and January for that to happen. So that's my attitude from a trader's viewpoint, is I'd like to just be in it, and we are, but I'd like to have others in it if they find a place for buying and so on that fits their risk tolerance and all the usual things. I like the idea of being in it with the idea that we may in fact go beyond that level. Put it this way, it could be a very good run up. Aside from hitting the 1761 and so on, it could be a very good run up. And I'd like to be in it. I'd like to have others in it as well. Now that having said that, I'd also like to say that I want people to be careful that we should not be seeing any weekly, you know, daily but weekly closes, especially below 1680 or 1675 at the worst between now and then. We're at 1714. So this is a longer-term outlook, but that's our outlook. We think it's going higher into January. And, Dwayne, you had talked about early in the year the potential for much higher prices in gold. We've had a good rally into the, you know, final part of the year here. And with this outlook, even though it may take us into January, we have a possibility of sharply higher prices here. And you know what? If you are going to be long and you're going to follow what we're talking about, you would definitely want to book something at or near that 1760 level. Just get something off there and then hold the remainder for the possibility, and we might just be in for a nice surprise and either a test, what Dwayne you were talking about, the 18, or perhaps higher. You know, I want to give them a shot to do it. This is a good place to take that shot, and I like these kinds of shots where, hey, we have a forecast going up anyway, why not be long here? And since the forecast requires more than usual time to complete, there's real time in there for this thing to really have a move. So I kind of like the whole tone of the setup here.
Bert,
so
Bert had typed in. He's on the phone right now, so he can't come on and talk. He typed into me potential cup and handle here. Cup and handle is not one of the patterns that I watch for. Not because I have anything against it. It's just not one that I ever really took the time.
You're a cup and handle hater.
I am. Let the truth be known. But this, right, guy's is, I just went out and pulled an image off the internet. When you hear cup and handle pattern, this is what they're talking about here. And you get a little handle. And then when you break this trend line right here, away she goes. And so, keep that in mind and look at, oh, I know what I can do. So this trend line is going to be, it's going to have to come off of here. And when Bert gets off the phone and can come on, any additional information, or if any of you guys, you know, if that's one of the patterns that you're familiar with, if you want to type something in and share with me, I'm assuming that that's what we're just waiting for, is for that to come. It's already did the down move. Now, it's amazing how similar these two charts really are. I don't even know what market this is. I just typed in cup and handle, and this is what popped up. So there and here. And I know that your work, David, is not based on chart patterns, but when something like what you're projecting with a method that is completely different,
right,
yeah, lines up with something that's been around forever, like you know, the basic technical charting that you'll find in those Fibber and McGee books and all that kind of stuff. It's kind of, it's like waving a flag going, hey, check this out. So.
No, I've always liked that. I always liked the idea of two very separate techniques coming up with an identical or very close type of you know, outlook for the market. I like the idea of two separate indicators. Let's say you use indicators, two completely different indicators, not the same that look different, but they really are based in differences. They have differences.
They're measuring different
Measuring different things. Like a stochastic, as an example, is very different in its measurement than an MACD, as an example. So when both of those separate things would give you a signal, I like that. You know, anything where you have more than one verifiable technique that's pointing to something. You don't want to go too far in that direction because then you end up, like so many people, almost not able to act because you have so many things that have to line up to be so perfect. And that will happen once in a while, but for practical purposes, it kind of takes you out of the trading game for large swaths of time because all those things won't necessarily line up perfectly. So there. Real quick on to move ahead from gold, Dwayne, Facebook today up further. We've had a really huge rally in Facebook from roughly the $18 level back right up to $24. That's a very impressive move off of those lows just recently.
It really is. And considering the news that's accompanied it, that all of these shares were released and the world thought thing would go down because of that, and in fact, it's done. Let me show the chart right here real quick. Here we go, guys. Look at this. Facebook. The day they announced that 777 million new shares are going to come on the market, and that, you know, typically would just crush a stock. Look at what's happened.
Yeah.
This is a phenomena. And I don't have any, I don't have anything to offer you in the way of an explanation. I don't. Other than.
And sometimes, go ahead.
Other than, there it is.
Yeah. No, there it is. Sometimes the markets, it doesn't have to be Facebook. It could be anything. Sometimes markets are just very non-intuitive. And Ben had said something. He doesn't trade his opinion. He trades the market. That actually is, you know, it's one of those old sayings. It's a thing, you've probably heard that before. I don't trade my opinion, I trade the market. Or try to do that. Try to not trade your opinion and trade the market. Well, it's difficult not to trade your opinion because your opinion is based on what the market's doing. But in many cases, the market goes counter to your opinion, and can you and should you trade that? And that's when you get into that extraordinary skill of being able to trade the market rather than your opinion, because I found myself in so many instances, you know, looking for a particular move to happen. I have an opinion. I have a setup of some kind. And if it doesn't follow through, I have difficulty trading it in the other way, and that would be trading the market rather than trading my opinion. So I've gotten over some of that over the years. One of the skills that I know that I have is I can re-enter a position once being stopped out. If a market has supposed to firm up on a certain level and then it comes down and stops me out and then, oh, just kidding, they reconfirm and close back above or whatever the confirmation is, I do have the ability to get back in, sometimes even larger than originally, in order to take advantage of that reconfirmation, which is often difficult for people because all it takes for most traders is just to get a little slap once and it's like, oh, okay, well, we won't do that one. I'll wait for the next one. So, at least for me, I struggled with that, and that has been a very powerful tool. And I just want to mention, in our Reflected Wave course, we show how common it is for that to be a really great trade, how that very setup, the reconfirmation of a previous Reflected Wave high or low, a test of it, and so on, leads to almost an immediate powerful move. And if you can get yourself, it looks easy after the fact. I don't know if you've noticed that about markets. They look really easy after the fact. But in real time, it's very difficult sometimes to put yourself back in having been stopped out. And yet, it's one of the most profitable things I've found about markets. If you've got it right, if your original outlook is right and they stop you out and then they reconfirm on that after that stop out, one of the most profitable things I could tell somebody to do, I'd pass that on to my heirs, you know, on my deathbed. I'd say, do this, you know. What did Dave say? What was his last words? Re-enter on reconfirmation. Oh, okay. That was my dying words. You know, it's that good. So take a look at that in your own work and see if that's something that works. I used to joke on the show that my last dying words were going to be, what is one-hour Martinizing? Because I've driven around for a long time and saw the one-hour Martinizing signs, and I never knew what they were. All right, we'll move on. It used to be really funny, but there is no more one-hour Martinizing because they all went away, and so it used to be a funny line.
It still has a certain amount of rustic charm.
It has a little charm to it.
Now, Bert is back. Bert, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, did you want to make any comment on, before I move off the gold chart, did I do that right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is a lot of, presumption here. I mean, it's lacking a confirmation, but, I didn't realize it until I saw on your screen that potentially could be a very bullish pattern there. And, I would think anything back above 1800 would be, the beginning of something very powerful to the upside, and that would actually fall in line with what David's kind of foreshadowing, an initial move to 1760 with the potential of even higher prices into December and January.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something we should probably post and keep in the background and see how that unfolds.
Okay.
Yeah, just be careful. Just be careful with it.
Oh, and always be careful.
Yeah, and always be careful.
So, is it true that John McAfee is one of your old guitar buddies?
Are you talking to me or
yeah,
to...
I'm talking to you.
John McAfee, I don't know who he
is.
This
is the fellow behind McAfee Software who's on the run.
No. Yeah, and now what happened to him? Briefly, I know there was the murder thing.
Right.
Is he... What's that?
Well, this guy, I mean, this is a recent picture, I believe. He's running from the police in Belize. There's meth involved. Okay, now this picture, he's showing his age a little bit. On TV, on the picture they're showing on TV, he looks like a teenager. He's 70, and he's caught up in some kind of meth thing, and there's a murder, and he's running from the police, and he made a call to Wired magazine the other day, which I thought was kind of ironic since there's meth involved. He did an interview with Wired.
The one magazine he selected was Wired.
And he says they're breaking into my house right now. I think this is over. They're going to kill me. But I guess he's still on the run. As far as I know. I just didn't want to interrupt you. I'm sorry. I just
No. This is an interesting story. And you know what? I just want to throw in my little comments. I've noticed now that I'm 55 years old, and the more you live, the more you see. And I have seen that. Little quirks about people, including myself, including anybody else, little quirks often become bigger issues when people get older. Little things that were bothering them when they were young, later as they get older, in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, 70s, these things start to really sort of grow. They're like little tiny things that grew through their life, and finally now they're really, like take a person who's a little bit that wash their hands a little bit more than the normal person does. And then as they get older, that kind of goes on. And by the time they're in their 70s, they won't touch anybody or anything, or 60s or whatever, because that thing has kind of taken over. It took root and took over. And this has to do with ideas about people or, racist ideas about people's skin color and where they're from and the kinds of people they are and whatnot. Those things, if they're not cleared out, they can grow, and then later you get older, and they really become a big issue. Maybe some of you with elderly parents, like I did with mine, saw some of that. My own mother was early. I remember from a young age that she – I remember there was company over at the house, and she was unusually concerned about a small piece of art that she had herself misplaced. And so I heard her say with company there – we've been robbed. And she wasn't joking. She actually thought in her mind, she had gotten so concerned about this little piece of art. My mom collected African art that she said, well, we've been robbed. And I thought, well, that seems like a very big leap from, we're inside a nice, comfortable home and there's no sign of break-in and so on, to her jumping even back then to thinking that we may have been robbed. And then later, as she got older, she got more and more concerned. That trait started to grow more and more until when she was more elderly, she was very, very obsessed with people taking things from her and that sort of thing. Many of you probably have seen that. happen. I don't know why we got onto that. Oh, because of this guy. So here we have this man. It's an interesting human nature story. He's 70-year-old. He has the world at his hands. He sold his company for huge amounts of money. He can live anywhere and do anything. And yet, he got himself into a situation, possibly, where he felt the need to, I'm not accusing him, but maybe he murdered this guy and shot this guy, and that's the way he's on. That's why he's on the run. And isn't it interesting? It doesn't matter what you have. You've got all the money you need, all the situational things you need. He's a nice-looking guy. He can do anything he wants. And yet, these things, maybe these feelings about people have been in his life his whole life, and now he's getting elderly. He pulls out a gun, and perhaps, again, not accusing him, but it's possible that he murdered this guy. And I've seen this over and over again. Maybe you've seen it in your own thing. I have my own daughter, I believe, has some of the things about cleanliness and that sort of thing that may end up, and I've mentioned to her, I said, I want you to keep an eye on that and don't let that get out of control later in life, because this is one of those situations where it could. So it's interesting. This is the guy that did McAfee Software, brilliant guy, probably came up with a product that is still running and still on the market, and you know, he unfortunately got into a situation where maybe, you know, maybe he did something like murder, which isn't a good thing.
Yeah, no.
So we'll find out.
Anyway. Okay. All right, well, Bert, thanks for pointing that out about the cup and handle. We will continue to watch that as we move forward.
Over to the Euro real quick.
Okay. Yeah,
or wherever
question,
you want it.
There was a question earlier if you are still bullish on the Euro.
Yeah, I am. In order for – we have a roadmap out on the Euro. We're in the I haven't given the roadmap out on the radio, but we're in the on-time week for the Euro to test and stay above the 126.45 level. We actually didn't touch that this week. We got down to 126.65. So there is the possibility that maybe next week they need to go down and complete that. But as it sits right now, we normally would not be long the Euro until next week anyway, because we want to let the week close. I know we're just minutes away from the close probably, but we want to let the week close above the critical level. So, yes, we are, if we close, and I believe we will today, above 126.45. And then with a decent open next week, Ben asked me that question, and we'll start putting together the trade. If you want to see the full roadmap, you can come over to pagetrader.com and sign up for a free trial, and it'll show you the roadmap in there for the Euro. And we've done a number of these on Euro. Euro is a great market. But I like to be extra cautious at the start unless there's some particularly good thing where it's just a buy the silly thing. Or, you know, a few days back we had one of those on the Euro, a sell the thing, where back on November 6th and 7th, you could just sell short because of the nature of the whole setup. It just was, the you know, there was a 150 pip move or something to the downside for the market to go down to 126.84 into November 12th. And that happens from time to time, but that's not every trade. This one has a little bit more finesse that you would want to apply. And for me, finesse simply means the balancing of risk and reward. Wouldn't you rather make less money with more certainty? Isn't the certainty the really big thing in trading? It should be. Because certainty means that you've got a high degree of probability that you're going to make some gains. That's what it is. If you are too concerned about the amount of gains, then certainty starts to shrink. You know, the two have to be balanced. So for me, the term finessing is really balancing those two. And I just weigh, for me, in my own approach, I like to weigh on, you know, the payment for getting less profit is greater certainty. You get, that's the return you get on, is you get greater certainty that the move is underway. So in this particular case, I'm not at all concerned. I'm not in the Euro. I'm not all concerned about getting in the Euro yet. Next week, I'll start looking at a little bit more interest, with a little more interest, and then if it starts to move, I'll get in and I'll let you know. So same thing with gold and any of these things, because there's plenty of money there. There's plenty of points gain and so on. And this is true for any trade given out by Dwayne and Michael, or myself or Bert. All of it all ends up being that balance of risk and reward. And I like more certainty. I like knowing that once I'm in, there's a higher certainty that I'm going to be paid for my effort. And I give up a certain percentage of price in order to know that. But that's a great thing. I mean, to me, that's like, wow, I'll do that all day. That's what I do all day, by the way. But I would do that all day. Is that. Okay, so we'll move on to the euro. I had some other stuff. We're running out of time. We'll save it for next week. Let's see if there's anything else of real interest here. Crude starting to wake up. We have something we talked about for November for crude for a bottom, but I haven't given anything out yet on it. Tesla Motors continues to move higher. I may be in California around December 15th. If somebody, I mentioned this before, I'll just mention it again. If somebody wants to and is in the Santa Monica area, it's possible that I'm going to be out there taking a test drive of the Tesla electric car, the Model S performance version. And if you'd like to meet me, any of you, over there in Santa Monica where the car is, we can all go for a test drive and you can zip along, and I'd be very happy to have you. Obviously, can't have 50 people because we won't all fit in the car, but you get the picture. So if I am going, I'll let you know, and if you guys want to, you can email me directly or call, but our email is info@pagetrader.com, and just say count me in, and I'll meet you over there, and we'll grab some lunch and go check that little electric car out.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like fun.
All right. It does. Dwayne, come on out. Let's have a good old time. You and I would be dangerous together, though. That's the problem.
Pretty far out of my neck of the woods, but you never know.
Yeah, I know.
You never know.
You never know.
When are you thinking about doing it?
It's December 15th. I think it's the 15th. Let's check the calendar and see what the 15th actually is.
Me and the elves are pretty busy that time of year, so.
I know. I'm going to bump this up. So the December 15th actually is Saturday. So it's Saturday, December 15th, and I realize this is a time when families and whatnot are all getting together. I'm just saying, just letting you know,
okay.
CFR and listeners, if you come out there, I'm not going to try to sell you anything. We're just doing this for fun, okay? I won't have any forms for you to fill out to sign up or anything. It's just for fun, just for if you have an interest in it. Okay, yeah. Let's see. You see me there. Okay, press hard. You're going through four copies here. All right, let's see. Real quick, if there's anything else. We do have a listener. I didn't put this out on the radio, so I can't take any credit for it, but one of our listeners had shorted Coco yesterday based upon a daily reflected wave top. He called up and asked. He's actually a professional. He's actually a CTA. He called up and said, does this look good for a short on the Coco? And Coco is down decently today. So we have the beginning of a nice multi-day move in Coco. And so that's nice. All I'm saying, if he's listening, he knows who he is. Let's see if there's anything else here we've got of any importance. Corn. Dwayne, I don't know if you're doing anything with corn. Did you ever re-trigger your entry or no?
We were trying to get we had a trigger at 7:08, and we did not trigger.
Okay.
We're looking for 7:08 on the downside to just above this little area here.
Okay.
And because this.
They had a nice move up here today, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Because measuring from the top of the head to the neckline on that pattern gave us this potential target down here. And so we wanted to get through this little double bottom area here. And we may not get triggered. This thing may head north. What did soybeans do today? Did they rally?
Let's see. Let's take a quick look at the soy. And I don't have anything on soy. I know soy is down today. Again, soy's had a very powerful move down. go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that we haven't given out anything on the soy for quite some time. The last thing we did give out, though, on the radio anyway, for this, because we don't have anything that we've done in roadmaps or anything with soy, was that the last quarter of this year was the on-time quarter for a reflected wave top. It came in one quarter early, and we had suggested at the time that if they closed below, if they closed the third quarter of this year below 1663, that would be an early indication. Not an absolute, but an early indication that the market was done on the upside. So what we're seeing here, this big move down, is really a much, it's a big time frame, big boy move that's underway off of a very important top. And this again is something that farmers have to deal with. You know this because they have their planted stuff and they have the futures market. And if the stuff is selling, if the futures market is up real high, they want to, if they say, well, that's good enough for me, they can do what's called hedging. and sell futures contracts against the current crop. It's a little bit complicated to verbalize it, but it simply means that in the end, they've locked in the price of their crop, and they can say to themselves, okay, I'm happy with that price. Even if it goes higher or whatever, this is good enough for me. They can use future contracts to lock in the price of their physically growing, not yet harvested, and even in some cases harvested, in the grain silo or whatever, soybeans. And so farmers, this is one of the things that farmers have to do. It's part of their business is to hedge their crops if they can. So it's an interesting industry that they're in. And people that sell gasoline at gas stations have to do the same thing. They have to think out 6 months, and they have to plan for that gasoline. And they, some of those gas station owners, you know, you see the prices up there. You think the guy's having a really good life because cars have to pull in there and stuff. He's got a pretty lot of stuff he's got to work on to make sure that his business can be profitable. Because gas station owners make very small profits on gasoline. They have to sell an awful lot of it in order for it to make sense for them. And on top of that, they can get it wrong. They can actually buy it at prices that are they're in the same position that the farmer is, in as much as they may have gasoline underground in the tank that they're going to sell that they bought at a much higher price, but they now have to sell it at much lower prices and lose on the whole batch. And they have to use, they can use futures contracts in crude oil to hedge their stuff. So owning and operating a gas station, if you're going to do it really right, is somewhat complex because of the issue that they have three, you know, a quarter or two quarters out that they have to order the stuff for it to finally get there and be produced and so on. So don't begrudge the gas station guy. You know, he's got his stuff laid out for him.
Kevin in the chat room, who had mentioned earlier that he is a farmer, he hedges with shorts. I'll just read it. I hedge with shorts, but I buy and sell calls and puts.
Interesting. Now, that's more speculation, perhaps, but maybe it's a blend of a hedge and some speculation in there. You know, farmers do that as well. There's no question about it.
We have a pretty sophisticated audience.
Yeah, that is. That's very good. In order to do the premium thing, you know, where you're buying options, you have to have some idea, obviously, of when the market's going to move. Otherwise, your premium starts to decay, and it tends to decay quicker as you're getting to the end of the contract and so on. I know you guys all know this, but it means, though, that you have to have a strategy that allows you to have a good working idea of the when of things, like, if you buy 3 months out of premium, like an option that expires 3 months from now, then you're basically saying, I think the thing I'm looking for is going to happen within 3 months. And if that fits in your window, then that can work for you. One thing I will say about options, then I'll let you go, because I know we've been on for a while here, but I just want to say this, that we're generally option sellers. We like to get in and sell premium, primarily because time is in our favor. That means every day that goes by, the option is losing value for the person who purchased it. And so if we have a good trade set up, we're willing to take less profit. There's another example of that. We might only get 3 points that when we sell the option, we take in 3 points. That's as good as it's going to get, no matter how far the market moves. But the time decay factor does help. And so that's why we're willing to do that. However, if you get your timing down, if you get your market, the craft of trading in the markets down to the point where you can time bigger moves. For us, that's like our volatility cycles. Maybe Dwayne has a certain way that he puts that together. Each of us has our own way of doing it. In my particular case, it's with volatility cycles. Buying premium makes way, way more sense than selling it, because the buying premium is set up in such a way, buying options, to be attractive to the public. It's just the way it's set up. It's just you can make a lot of really powerful, surprisingly high percentage gains by utilizing options, but you have to know when that volatility cycle is due or when the market is due to make a big, fast move. If you know that, you can take advantage of what often are practically preposterous gains that are available in option buying. And you have to realize that if you're wrong in options, you'll often lose at least a third, and Bert will confirm this, or as much as a half of the premium. Just to be wrong once means that you're going to lose a third to a half of the premium you paid. So if you bought an option for $1,000 and this particular trade didn't work out, and that's fair enough, that happens, you don't get to get out with a few tick loss. You're generally going to lose a third to a half of that if you're being prudent with it, even sometimes more. But the reverse of that is if you have your timing down, if you've got the craft of timing the market down good, and especially with volatility, you know, the gains can just be practically silly because you're buying an option for a very, very small amount of money that's way outside the range of where the market is now. And then the market has this explosive move up through the cycle or whatever, and suddenly, instantaneously, that option, in many cases, is worth 10 times what you paid for it. So really, that's what I mean. It's like preposterous. And there are people, there are savvy traders who do nothing but take advantage of what normally is the public's, you know, use of options, but they have their trading skill highly crafted, and they know how to manage the downside. It's the same thing we all talk about on the radio program. And when they get it right, they make 3, 4, 5, 7, 10, even, believe it or not, 20 times the gain on their original investment. It's preposterous. I mean, I don't know of any other word for it. But it is available there if you can get your timing down. And in our particular case, it has to do with what we call volatility cycles that are tied to roadmaps. In another person's thing, maybe it's a wave three in Elliott, or you know, whatever your thing is, buying options can be very valuable strategy to use. But I think it's not for everybody. I think it's for people who really have an understanding of market timing more than the usual. You know, somebody who's really taken that to their own level, et cetera. Then the option buying can really be good, really a fabulous tool if you can get your craft of the timing down. So anyway, with that, listen, Thanksgiving's coming up next week. I'm looking forward to it. I hope everybody else is as well. As you get older, Thanksgiving means a lot more, and I'm not being sentimental. I mean, it just means a lot more to be around your family and see your kids, you know, now grown up and spending some time with them, because they don't really want to spend that much time with you when they get a little older here now, do they? They have their own little life. They got their girlfriends or boyfriends or whatever, and you practically have to chain them into a room because it's just disgusting to be with your parents, you know. Not really, but I'm looking forward to that next week, and I've noticed that it used to not mean a lot to me, but as I've gotten older, it really is. I actually think to myself, gosh, you know, I almost sound like a grandmother. Oh, we're getting ready for Thanksgiving, you know, but I'm feeling that way. I'm looking forward to having some family time.
I bet you look great in a June Cleaver
in an apron.
Style apron.
Oh, yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
There was
no,
two
I'll
questions.
Send some pictures in.
Let me throw these two questions out real quick, and then I got to run, too, because
yeah, absolutely. We're done.
Very important meeting. JM asked, what's a good tool to measure volatility? I know that you have your own way of doing your volatility cycles, but he's asking just in general, what's a good tool to measure volatility? And then Kevin asks, do you know of any good books on option volatility? And I threw up the only tool that I have per se for measuring volatility is just the average true range. And that's not predicting anything. That's just averaging out what's already happened over the last period.
Yeah, no, that's right. And I'll tell you that in order to do the options correctly, I mean, this is my opinion and you're asking me, so I'm going to tell you my opinion. You must not touch the purchase of options unless you can accurately predict volatility. You have to be able to predict volatility, directional price movement, in order to make money with these options. Because, you know, unless you're just always going to buy a way, way far out option, you know, something that costs, you know, $2,500 per option, and then you're sort of losing some of the real value of options, right, which is that you can buy them for cheap and sell them for these larger gains. So you do have to have a skill in understanding volatility. In our particular work, the only tool that I have, first of all, and forgive the sales pitch, but reflected wave is not bad for calling turning points, and some of those turning points can be very fast directional moves. But the tool that I use for calling volatility cycles has to do, it's something we call the roadmap, and you, many of you may know about what that is. But the roadmap has a function in it where it can call big volatile moves that are going to occur. You know, the big crude move last year or this year in May, and then last year with the big euro move and so on. These are the kinds of setups where you would want to use that. We don't teach right now the roadmap. That's not something that we have out. It's a more complex. It's the thing that has to do with the three-dimensionality of the markets. So I don't have a way for you that I could verbally say, here's a way that I know that you can be sure that volatility is going to appear. But I would suggest that you study volatility. If you're going to get an interest in it, study the markets and take a look and see if you can find something that works for you, because these options can be very valuable as a tool to make money. And just realize it's a whole different game, and that some pros, even though you always read, well, the pros don't buy options, it's the, you know, the pros sell options and so on, there certainly are pros out there that have crafted their skill. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I can do to tell you about...
your favorite optional book is Lawrence McMillan's Options as a Strategic Investment.
Yeah, and go ahead. I was just going to say, that book, the title of that book, I had to have dental work done just to be able to say the full title. I had to go to the dentist. Can you get this right here? Options as a Strategic Investment. I mean, you would think that would be a book. If he would have come to me and said, that's the title, I would have said, Lawrence, you need to kind of shorten that up and simplify it so that my tongue doesn't crash into my, you know, feet as I'm trying to say it. But anyway, it turns out that it's a very good book. He talks about a lot of this. About volatility, the purchase of options, how they work, and so on. There might be some hints in there as well. I respect Lawrence McMillan. I really do. He's a guy that I met in person, and I'm just saying that I think he wrote the preeminent book on options. You're not going to find the pocket edition of it. It's very big, but it might not be a bad book for you to, and I appreciate you mentioning it, this might not be a bad book for you to purchase. Options as a Strategic Investment, I think it's in its 11th printing. So check that out. And then I will, on the program again for new people, I'll demonstrate another volatility cycle for you so you can see when we have one in a particular market that we really like the setup for. I'll demonstrate it for you. You can see the power of the move. And if you want to, you can purchase an option off of that and see how that works out for you. But we'll talk about that at the time. Like to wish everybody a wonderful weekend. Dwayne, you too. And I'm looking forward to be here on Monday. Thanksgiving week, I suppose Thanksgiving, there's no trading, right? Is that a holiday?
We're going to be closed Thursday and Friday.
Okay, so Thursday through Sunday is going to be off, so we'll only have a few days next week. So it should be interesting. And that's my show.
All right, buddy. Have a great weekend, Dave. Don't forget to get your massage. I'm going to send you off today to a different song, all right?
All right. This
so take
is beautiful.
Care. Have a great weekend.
Thank you very much, you guys. See you all. See you on Monday.
I don't want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. I don't care about the presents underneath the Christmas tree.
Well, guys, the sound quality of that recording was so horrendous. Normally, you can only hear how horrendous it really is, but I even heard that one. So let me put the screen back up where it belongs. Oh. Hold on there. Here we go. We'll get it right. Now, I'm not superstitious or anything, but you have to have a proper exit song when your guest leaves. So let's get through this, and then we'll wrap it up. Okay, that is officially going to do it for us today. If you would like to hear that lovely Christmas song, get in the spirit, go to imturningpoints.org, O-R-G. I sent that to David for Christmas last year. I had it delivered Christmas morning via a text message on his iPhone. I thought that was kind of clever. Anyway, You can go there and listen to it. It's a great song. The guy that did the video, I've read the story behind the guy. He's an ordinary guy. He lives in a small apartment in New York. But the editing, filming it was one thing, but then editing it was, he talks about the mountains of cigarettes and the ashtray on his desk as he spent way too many hours editing. But the finished project was a very beautiful, very moving video. It is the interior of Macy's at Christmas, and it's a great song. I am turningpoints.org. You can go there and listen to it yourself. Now, as we close out the show, here we sit where? At the Weekly Trading Zone. And how long have we been at the Weekly Trading Zone? 1349/1350. We've been there since the market opened yesterday morning. So however many hours it is across there, I'm not even going to bother to count them all. Now, did we swing high, swing low, swing high? Yeah, we did. But the center of gravity, 1349, at this point, it would not surprise me at all if we just simply closed inside of that one-point zone. Now, we've still got an hour and a half left in the markets today, so anything can happen. You know, embrace the possibilities, I once heard a guy say. So, and I learned to do that. You know what? Give credit where credit's due. I learned to embrace the possibilities. So the market, if it makes a move to the downside, it's Friday afternoon. I don't expect any more news out other than this thing's heating up pretty quickly in Israel right now, in Jerusalem. So keep an eye on that. That will always affect the markets. If something happens tonight, tomorrow, Sunday, the Globex Open Sunday night will be affected. I wish Bert were here so I could ask him if the new time for Globex, if that kicks in this Sunday night. Are you there, Bert? All right, tell you what I'll do, guys, is I will pull out my PDF, check it, and make sure if the Globex hours are changing as of this Sunday, I'll make sure they're on the blog so you're up to date on that. As far as I know, I will be here for the Globex Open Sunday night. I will tweet anything of interest that I see out there in the markets. Crude and gold can really be affected by what's going on in the Mideast. And in turn, that will affect the U.S. markets. It will also affect the currency markets, the euro. The yen has really been taking a beating. That's not directly tied to anything going on in the Mideast, but as far as what's happening today in the Gaza Strip and Jerusalem. But watch this. See where we close today. And then we'll have a new set of zones, which will come out to all of the partners prior to the open on Monday. And if you're on the free trial, you'll also have access to the weekly trading zones. Now, this week, just like last week and the week before and however many weeks before, so far, the low of the week was marked by a weekly trading zone. I know it swung below it. That's a fact. And back above it. But, I mean, that's pretty much it. Did we have another zone below us? We sure did, down at 24.25. We said early on in the week, the market would really have to get hard for that to happen. And we did get hit hard. I mean, look what happened. This is today. Here's Thursday. It was pretty quiet. Just hovering around that zone, just like today. But going back to Wednesday, there was 4 hours of consolidation at a zone, 3 hours of consolidation at a zone, and a touch-and-go right here. Now, whenever we have a touch-and-go landing, that's what I call it, at a weekly zone, we expect price to revisit the zone and consolidate, or, as some call it, coil. All right? This thing's wound tight, as tight as it gets. So there could be something very explosive on Globex Sunday night. If there is, I'll tweet all about it. Going back into Tuesday, we had a center of gravity here at the 75.76. The highest we got as far as the zones go for this week would have been up at 87.88. We missed that by 3 ticks. We missed 87 by 3 ticks. Let me just drop that zone in there, if I can. I'm having some memory issues. I really have just a lot of stuff going. But it should be able to handle it. It was designed to handle it, built from the ground up to take the pressure. So we missed that by 3 ticks. So, in effect, the high of the week was at a weekly zone. And it looks like the low of the week is going to end up at a zone. But again, we do have an hour and 20 minutes of market left. Other than that, it is the weekend. So I hope you'll make it a point to spend some quality time with your family. Of course, I'll see you all in church on Sunday. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a 1-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.